go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, half-crazed by cheap cough syrup once again. I am in the broadcast chair. This 23rd day of February, 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. We also live at HeadOn.live. Both places easily provide you access to the chat room, where you pick yourself out a free screen name and a free password. Yes, it's free. Well, you will immediately be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Hoghead and Mr. Bill and Squeaky and Steve from Georgistan, and all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, still has declined to fold space on this final Friday of February 2018, and is in fact Sparky in the chat room. Yes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and we've got 3 hours of magnificent conversation. And as the intro says, there, as John Fox points out, cussing and discussing for the evening. It is Friday on the front porch. That means in about 57 minutes or so, we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, in which Sparky will light up the Bob signal and toss out the breadcrumb trail for those as may wish to participate in the week-ending conversation. And we'll see just exactly where that takes us. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch before, please note, in order so to do, you must send a contact request on Skype. Sorry, Friday on the Front Porch doesn't work with phone numbers. But on Skype, you must send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word, Sparky Dunk, and then he will show you the aforementioned breadcrumb trail and point you to direct your attention to the right quadrant of the sky in which to seek the aforementioned Bob signal. Yes. Okie doke. So we've got some thanks to send out this evening, because we have subscribers for the 23rd day of the month. We do, indeed. We have four of them. We have Stacy. Thank you, Stacy, in PA. Thank you very kindly. We also have our dear friend from Maryland, Philip. Thank you, Philip. And we have Brenda in Washington. Thank you, Brenda, for being a subscriber. And thanks also to Joyce in Washington State. Thank you, all four of you. Thank you very kindly for being subscribers and being a big part of keeping The Horn on the air each and every month. I am happy to report that thanks to some action by Yuki last night after the program, we are done with fundraising for the month of February. We finished, and so that means we're going to have some fundraising for your radio, including tonight. So thank you as well, very kindly, Yuki. And that also means that, courtesy of Ralph's, we have met the Trash Fitzwalker Stand Challenge, kicking an extra $30 onto the month's tally. So thank you, Ralph's. Thank you very kindly indeed. All right. That's awesome. And that means all we'll be doing is thanking subscribers for the remaining programs of the month, to wit, tonight, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Yay! I'm excited. I'm relieved. It means the next three it's just going to be fun. Just get on the microphone and get going. If you hear a little bit of background noise, that will be the air conditioner. Mm-hmm. Because it is 70 degrees in the studio here. And outside, it is 68 degrees. I didn't want to risk a relapse of whatever this godforsaken bug is. So despite my inclinations, I regret to inform you, or perhaps I should be, you'll be happy that I'm informing you, that we are in fact not doing Naked Radio this evening. I know. But, like I said, I'm still half crazed on cheap cough syrup, and it's, whew, party. But hopefully I won't produce too much Limbaugh radio. More on him in a minute. So it's the 23rd day of February. I was sick on Wednesday. There was just no way I could get behind the microphone. And lo and behold, the goddess of irony dropped one in our laps, and I was, well, no, let's say she threw a pinpoint long bomb with me being the receiver streaking down the sideline, no defenders in sight, catching me in stride, and the pass went right through my arms and bounced harmlessly to the turf. What do I mean by that? I mean that Billy Graham managed to die on prayer meeting Wednesday, and I was powerless to do anything about it. You want to talk about frustrating. Whew! Mercy sakes alive. That was intensely frustrating. Because, among other things, the lionizing and the hagiography that went on and is still going, my God. If you want revolting, I got revolting. CNN reported in the wake of Billy Graham heading for his long dirt nap that starting next week, the moldering corpse of the biggest religious grifter ever to hold sway in the United States will lie in state in the rotunda of the United States Capitol. He strutted and fretted his hour upon our stage for 99 years. Billy Graham did. And to the best of my knowledge, never did a single day's work in those 99 years. Never broke a sweat. Instead, he merely took corporate money in exchange for being a raging anti-communist, so-called, red-baiting, Bible-banging fraud. A lot of the stories about his life talk about the fact that scandal never touched his life. And what they mean by that is he never got caught with a live boy or a dead girl. But no, Speaker of the House and former Wienermobile driver Paul Ryan issued a statement yesterday saying that, yes, he would his moldering old remains would lie in state in the Capitol Rotunda next week. He's going to lay there from Wednesday, February the 28th through Thursday, March the 1st. As someone who values the Constitution of the United States and the separation of church and state, I have to tell you, I find this utterly and absolutely repugnant. Disgusting, even. But there he's going to lay, and, well, his boy Jesus isn't going to have him get up. But he's just going to lay there. Ill. Note coming in from Billable Rick, subject line, fundraising free Friday. Bob, stop telling us how to celebrate a fundraising free Friday. Thank you. Thank you, Billable Rick. You earned that one. Yes, you certainly did. And hey, thanks going out to John. Thank you, John, for kicking in, even though it is fundraising-free broadcasting. I'm of the understanding that Jack in Shreveport has dealt with the crud and the misery that I'm dealing with now, and I don't think he was ready for how I started the program. Oh, crap, not this again, says Jack. We're not going to have this whole in-state versus in-honor thing again, are we? One hopes not, but one cannot be sure. Because the fact of the matter is, There will be a service when the last mortal remains of Billy Graham arrive next week at the Capitol. Acting in concert, Paul Ryan and Chinless Mitch McConnell have invited Billy's boy, Franklin Graham, head of an organization called Samaritan's Cut Purse, or something like that, to attend. $2,300 guests have been invited, including Geezer Disgustus, Mike Pencilneck Geek, and every former living former president. Yes. One presumes Melanoma has been invited. She showed up today for the fake press conference held because we were visited today by the Prime Minister of Australia, one Malcolm Turnbull. Yes. Malcolm showed up to show America just how far he could stick his beak right up the fendiment of Donald J. Trump. By the time it was over, when Trump was talking, you could see Malcolm Turnbull
smiling in the back of Donald's throat. That was. Right.
Yes, yes, in fact, that was old Goanna Kincaid of the, Outback Territories, Kincaids, yes. Under the subject line, wait for it, James says, there will be a Billy Graham Cathedral built on the mall in D.C. Oh, I don't know if my cough syrup-addled mind can handle that, James. Not this early, but no, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, maybe they'll build it right there next to the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial, seeing how Billy Graham was so important to white folks in America. I mean, there's some real potential for lurch noises in this whole story. Billy will also lie in repose. I don't know. How are we supposed to know he's reposed? He's dead. We can't ask him. He's dead, Jim. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. He'll lie in repose in his old childhood home, reports CNN. They moved it part and parcel to Charlotte, North Carolina several years ago. He's camped out and parked there for the viewing pleasure of the public both this evening. Or rather, both Monday and Tuesday, the 26th and 27th. Get your tickets now. God almighty. They're going to dirt nap him next to his wife Ruth in a plain pine casket built by inmates at the Louisiana State Prison. Well, how lovely for a Southern evangelist to be parked in a casket in a pine box built by slave prison labor in the most in one of the most notorious slave labor prisons in the South, the state prison at Angola, Louisiana. Yeah. God almighty. God is firing. He's working overtime on this. Because, see, I just went through the entirety of that Billy Graham story, and gosh darn it, there wasn't a word in there. Maybe it's that whole speak no ill of the dead thing, but nah. It managed to not make a blessed mention. Blessed. See what I did there? Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm a professional. Don't try this at home. Because you see, friends and neighbors, I have the benefit of being properly supplemented for such activities. I couldn't get through these 3 hours this evening without the latest supplement from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Yes, that's right. I'm talking about unseasonable sarsaparilla. With the warm weather going on, the hardworking periodontic peripatetic scientists from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter have been hard at work, out digging in the roots and scrambling around in the underbrush to find new and fraudulent things to bring you for your radio delivered nutritional supplement enjoyment, and improvement. And that's why we're proud to announce today Unseasonable Sarsaparilla. Because in these halcyon 70-plus days, and an entire week of it in mid-February here, late February here, well, by Jove, they have happened upon a gold mine. And it can all be yours, a three-month supply for the low, low price of only $66.66, plus $6.66 shipping and handling in honor of the passing of the Reverend Billy Graham. And yes, if you order now, you will get a bundle of little credulity strips so that you can look in horror when you receive your bullshit nutritional supplements and find out that it's going to do absolutely nothing for you, just like all the other bullshit nutritional supplements on offer from various and sundry professional radio hosts who sell bullshit nutritional supplements, because you can't be a professional radio program without a professional bullshit radio supplement to hustle. Got it? Got it. Yes. So, post no bills, use no hooks, this side up. FOB, COD, MUD, Unseasonable Sarsaparilla from Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter. No salesman will call, operators are not standing by. There's no middleman, so we won't pass the savings on to you. Unseasonable Sarsaparilla, only from Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter. But yes, Billy Graham somehow managed to, in the CNN story, to miss, the CNN missed one of the great moments in Billy Graham's life. You know, he was an advisor and counselor to presidents, except the ones for whom he wasn't. Like, say, somehow or another, he found his way into the John F. Kennedy White House. But prior to the election of John F. Kennedy, he had actually created a coalition of Protestant ministers in order to try to stop, because in 1960, Billy Graham was a registered Democrat. No, really, hard to believe. But then again, a bunch of old white bigots were Democrats in 1960, because that's before the government actually took steps to ensure the voting rights of a whole swath of the American public who had skin darker than a white paper bag. Mm-hmm. That's before the Civil Rights Act or the Voting Rights Act. And so, yes, Billy Graham was a registered Democrat in 1960, but he was so upset, so terrified, so horrified by the prospect of having one of them mackerel snappers as a president that he formed a coalition to try to stop John Kennedy and elect in 1960 Richard M. Pinhead Nixon. Pinhead, that name was given to him, I believe, by Harry Truman. President of the United States, and then went groveling around after Kennedy was elected to apologize for everything he said about how Kennedy would be ruled by the Pope at Rome. Yeah, one of those nasty old nativist streaks that was still running around in 1960, the anti-Catholic bias.
John Kennedy will take his marching orders from the Pope at Rome.
That was Billy Graham, but somehow that's been whitewashed away. Whitewashed, yes. And then, Richard Nixon did eventually become president. And Richard Nixon was nothing if not grateful for the support that Billy Graham had given him. And so Billy became a regular, a confidant of Richard M. Pinhead Nixon. One can almost imagine Billy Graham showing up at the said pearly gates and looking at St. Peter, and St. Peter looking down, licking the thumb, flicking through the Lamb's Book of Life. Nixon? 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 I don't think we got a... Nope, no Nixon up here. Well, there's a Patricia, but... No, there's no...
There's no Dick Nixon up here. Hey, get one of those little imps on the blower. See if they got a Nixon down there. What? Oh, you already know? They do? Oh, yeah, okay, Reverend Graham. Your buddy Dick, he's roasting on a spit over an eternal flame at the big barbecue party in hell, you know, alongside people like Lester Maddox and George Wallace and other fine Americans. What's that? You'll just do without and come. No, you're not coming in. Wait, what? Oh, you thought all you had to do was believe in Jesus. You missed out on that whole Book of James thing where faith without works is dead, huh? Yeah, you did. You did. Yeah, how about that? Yeah. Well, see, I've got this entry here, says St. Pete. I've got this entry here about a conversation you had with Dick Nixon, the guy at the barbecue. Yeah, they're saying he does real well with a low hickory fire and one of those tangy vinegar-based North Carolina style barbecue sauces, Billy. They might want to try with, I don't know. You look like maybe you might do well with one of those sweet sort of mustard style sauces yourself. You know, because it gives you a nice yellow glow. You always did seem kind of yellow there, Billy. Real easy to beat up on people from the pulpit when you never actually have to deal with the impact of any of your words. I'm gonna tell the boys down in the basement to go with the mustard sauce for you. But it was sitting around, and see, none of this came out until, like, 2003 with the release of 500 hours of Nixon tapes that were released at almost this very time in 2002, recorded mostly from January to June of 1972. And Billy and Dick were chatting when Billy, not Dick, brought up the issue of the Jews, Mr. President, the Jews, and how they dominate the news media today. Well, you believe that, Billy, do you? Said Nixon. Yes, sir, I do. Oh, boy, so do I. I can't ever say that, but Billy, I believe it. This was before the 1972 re-election, and Billy followed and said, no, but if you get elected a second time, then we might be able to do something. Those media-dominating Jews. Yeah, every time Nixon got a real good paranoia going, pretty soon the Jews would come into the... I mean, sitting down, blathering away with old Hank, the bloody old murderous Hank Kissinger, and sooner or later... Well, you know, it's the Jews that have got all these young degenerate hippies all worked up, Henry. It's the Jews, I tell you, the Jews. Henry, being a Jew himself, would nod his evil little head and say, yes, Mr. President, the Jews. This is always the Jews, yes. These degenerate hippies, yeah, sure. But, yeah, Billy had a thing about the Jews, and when he got caught, and he still had the ability to speak back in the early aughts, he said, throughout my ministry, I have sought to build bridges between Jews and Christians,
I will continue to strongly support all future efforts to advance understanding and mutual respect between our communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a dandy little tape. Billy Graham said, then Nixon went on his paranoid way. And
Billy, the way the Jews dominate in Hollywood, the effect that they have on entertainment and in the news media.
And Billy responds by saying,
"A lot of Jews are great friends of mine. They swarm around me and are friendly to me."
Swarming. I seem to recall another time in recent world history when someone was talking about Jews in terms of swarming or infesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
"They swarm around me and are friendly to me," Mr. Graham said, "because they know that I'm friendly to Israel and so forth. But they don't know how I really feel about what they're doing to this country, Mr. President, and I have no power and no way to handle them."
Knowing that he was with a friendly audience, Nixon then replied,
"Well, you must not let them know, Billy. You can't let them know."
But that's not all there is. There was the night that Nixon gave his first Watergate speech. His first Watergate denial.
"I didn't know anything about this. I am an innocent man. I had no idea any of this was going on."
Meanwhile, he knew exactly what was going on. He was orchestrating what was going on. He was up to his filthy, filthy Republican, bloodthirsty Nixonian eyebrows in what was going on. And Billy Graham called to congratulate him on the speech and tell him,
"Oh, Mr. President, I just want you to know that it was a magnificent speech, and the Jew-dominated media..."
No, he didn't say Jew-dominated.
The media received it very well, except for that CBS. I'd like to slit their throats.
Oh, really? The Christian man of God, Billy Graham, said he would like to slit the throats of the folks at CBS. Yeah, you know, it's right there in the book of Mark, and it says, and they came to him and spake unto him, saying, "Lord, Lord, whatever shall we do when someone saith something unkind about us, even though, yea, verily, Lord, it be true? And Jesus look at them and spake and say unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto them, I'd like to slit their throats." No, actually, that's not in the Gospels. There's not. Jesus doesn't say anything about slitting anybody's throats. And by God, they had some pretty fine blade wear back then. Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's the guy who's going to lie in state in the Capitol Rotunda of the United States of America. Not going to lie in state at, like, the biggest Baptist church in America. That would be completely appropriate. But no, that's not going to happen. In complete abnegation of the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States, Billy Graham, who never did a goddamn thing for a single solitary person except him and his own immediate cabal in his life, is going to lie in state as though he were some common savior of humanity. And I won't kid you, I'm disgusted. This is a man who preached against unions. This is a man who preached against people organizing for a fair day's pay, for a fair day's work. This is a man whose entire career was underwritten by corporate America in an effort to keep working people from getting all, well, you know, uppity. And he's going to lie in state in the Capitol. Well, if that's the case, at least you know, Creflo Dollar and Kenneth Copeland and Jimmy Swaggart have something to look forward to, right? Yeah, here in West Virginia, back during the Don Nealon era of West Virginia football, we had a joke. What do Billy Graham and Don Nealon have in common? They're the only two men who can get 70,000 West Virginians to leap to their feet and yell, "Jesus Christ!" Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve in New York, says, "Got milk? Not such a good man, but one hell of a cracker. Good cracker. Good cracker." Jack in Shreveport, subject line, Pine Box. "This Pine Box brought to you by the state with the highest incarceration rate in the United States." Yes. Ron in Raleigh notes, "I wonder, will spitting on graves be allowed?" Well, you know, you're going to be in spitting distance there, Ron. You might want to go and find out. Scott and Punky with a note. Subject line, "The Right Reverend Dr. Billy Graham cracker." "Lie in repose? Well, I guess that makes sense. He lied all his life and posed." Oh, wait a minute. I've given you some tepid cowbells in the past there, Scott and Punky, but you earned the full jingle on that one. Okay, James explains, Billy Graham was trying to prevent the assassination of JFK. I guess that's as good as anything. And, hey, apparently Billable Rick is deeply offended by Fundraising Free Friday. "To celebrate a Fundraising Free Friday, I'm pledging $6.66 in the name of Billy Graham to the horn and urge other listeners to do the same." So what are you going to call it, Billable Rick? "I come not to praise Billy, but to bury him" challenge? Okay, well, all right, that's there. I had nothing to do with that. This is Fundraising Free Radio. And probably even angrier than he was to start with, a note coming in somewhat off topic by from Andy the Angry Jew. Subject line, "New York wears black." "I could not help being amused by your comment about how everybody wears black in New York. My Philadelphia, New York Catholic redheaded girlfriend wears nothing but 10 different shades of black. She made me get rid of all my Tommy Bahama shirts. Yes, I'm whipped and proud of it. Walking around out there in Illinois in looking like a pilgrim now, are you, Andy? Well, you know, in some cases blending in is not a bad idea. I understand that. Meanwhile, as regards the bizarre comments today of Geezer Disgustus over at CPAC, and he just threw the script out the window. It was all over the place. Under the subject line, Snake Charmer, our buddy Steve on the Gulf Coast, a member of the fraternity of Steve, accept no substitutes. Subject line, Snake Charmer, Jesus H., bring out the clown. I kept waiting for one of two things to happen. Either this idiot's helium-filled head is going to explode or he's going to float straight up into the clouds. Call him a narcissist if you want to, people. I'm just calling him Daffodil. Oh, my. Because that was a thing. It was a real, live, honest-to-goodness, no-kidding thing. Because when he showed up at CPAC, he cited something that I confess to not being familiar with, the Snake Song. We're not talking about Tom T. Hall's Sneaky Snake. We're talking about the Snake Song, an inflammatory anti-immigrant song. It's a ballad by Al Wilson about a reptile who repays a tender woman. Oh, that one. Okay. Oh, honey, you knew I was a snake when you took me in. That story. Think of it in terms of immigration. You knew damned well I was a snake before you took me in. And that's what we're doing with our country, folks. We're letting people in, believe me. And it's going to be a lot of people. It's only going to be worse. Yeah, he compared immigrants to the United States who happen to be insufficiently white for his preferences. With reptiles. Snakes. And he went on and said, the Democrats are being totally unresponsive. They don't want to do anything about DACA, I'm telling you. It's very possible that DACA won't happen. Yeah. The Snake Song. Jesus. We just get a little more Nazi every day, don't we? Because that really is how it starts. You start by dehumanizing the people you hate. And you teach others to think of them as non-human, subhuman, Untermenschen. And from there to active measures, it's not that far a distance. Not that very far at all. And thanks to the racism of Donald J. Trump, we are, in fact, well on our way. Also, we've got an update courtesy of
courtesy of Sister Carol Baker. Yes, we have a we have an update on Missouri's governor of 50 Shades of Grayton. The Missouri GOP has jumped in behind the guy who blackmailed a woman by taking naked photographs of her and then sending them to her and threatening her. Yes, the fine, upstanding, good, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republican Party of Missouri has gone all in behind Eric 50 Shades of Greitens. It's only funny if you say 50 Shades of Greitens. I figured that out too late last night. Cough syrup. I'm a little slow. They now say that, well, you know whose fault this is. It's not the good Christian philandering Republican who blindfolded and tied up and hung up a naked woman and then took pictures of her and threatened her never to reveal their illicit sexy time or else he would blackmail her with the naked photographs. No, it's not his fault at all. You know, it's George Soros's fault. Who didn't see that coming from like the smoke of a locomotive from 10 miles down straight track? Yes. As Carol points out, no shit. George held the governor at gunpoint and made him take those pictures and threatened to blackmail that woman. The GOP falsely claims the liberal activist prosecutor has taken down this law and order governor. Except, you know, a grand jury indicted him, not the county prosecutor. And Carol says, I'm feeling all law and ordery and Jesus-y and patriotic and shit. Oh, that's good, too. Wait, you get a cowbell for that, hoghead. Eric Greitens, a.k.a. Governor Kit Bondage. Yeah, oh, that even gets a fake rim shot. Mm-hmm. Yep, it's George Soros' fault. And Carol explains, now you know why you don't get money for George. He's making Eric have sexy time with hairdressers. Mm-hmm. Well, there's always a reason. Carol pointing out, I do love me some Schadenfreude Fridays. Oh, don't you, though? Don't you? What a perfect ending to the week. Yes. Meanwhile, Albert asks, writing from Rhode Island, hey, Bob, if Trump makes the Jews wear yellow stars, do you think he'd make his daughter and son-in-law wear them, too? I'm guessing they'd be, like, grandfathered in under his Christianity or something. It's not the yellow stars of David I'm so much worried about with this guy as maybe the yellow crescent moons. You know? Same bloodline. Same genetics. Maybe on the distaff side, if you know what I mean. Yeah. All right, this is... The $6.66 Barry Billy Graham challenge is getting legs, and this is just funny. You people. Billable Rick, you know. Somebody's keeping notes, Rick. Somebody's keeping notes. I'm just saying it. And I don't think he's able to participate in Friday on the Front Porch. But he kindly called in right there at the beginning of the program, and I would hate to miss an opportunity to chat with our buddy Rich in New Jersey, especially what with me having recently visited the Garden State, if only for a little bit. But we shot a video there. You can still go to rdtdaily.com on Facebook, and we need lots and lots of views of our little Wayne LaPierre NRA Natural Manure Tree of Liberty Award. But Rich in New Jersey's with us. Hey, Rich.
Bob, where is this Wayne LaPierre statue or whatever you call it? Think of a Bob. New Jersey.
Well, no, we just shot it in New Jersey. We went over to Weehawken.
Okay, right. Well, that's where I believe that's where Aaron Burr had the.
That's precisely why we went there.
Yeah. With Alexander Hamilton. Yeah. Okay, that's great.
Because I have a fascination with Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton, and particularly the Aaron Burr side of it, because it's. One of America's great historical mysteries, but we had gone over there. I'd wanted to see it, and we had that beautiful, it's a stunning view of Manhattan. And so Tara and I just decided to go ahead because we'd been talking about the whole Wayne LaPierre Natural Manure Award, and so we shot the video for it. Right there at so-called Hamilton Park.
So was Dana load of shit with him over there when he did that or what?
Wait, who?
Dana load of shit.
Oh, Dana but that Loesch. Yeah, Dana load of shit. That's a great net. Wait a minute, you get a cowbell for that, Rich. Okay.
Thank you.
She wasn't with Alexander Hamilton or Aaron Burr. I know that. But Wayne Wayne the Peter and her were together at CPAC yesterday, but she was making the rounds of the for-profit media earlier today, and well, she got her clock cleaned by Allison Camerota over at CNN. I mean, sparkling clean.
I don't think she did too good a job yesterday either.
Unless by good job you mean stalking around the stage looking like a full-blown fascist, no, she didn't.
She definitely looked like a full-blown fascist with that black suit, with that white blouse. Oh, my God. You right on the head. That's what I was thinking when I saw her. She looked like she was getting ready to crack the whip. Definitely. The way she was stalking around on that stage. You're right. Exactly. Beautiful, beautiful image of a fascist bitch.
And I'm trying to get away from the use of that B word.
Yeah, I hear you.
I think we can show our commitment to gender equality by just referring to her as an asshole.
Okay, acceptable terminology. I'll go with that. That's good. Now, Bob, every time I call you, it's wonderful because when I don't talk to you, I feel like I'm going nuts and butts, okay? But then I talk to you or listen to you, and I realize they're the crazy people, not me, okay?
Well, or you've got other crazy, or you've got crazy friends. I mean, it's subject to multiple lines of interpretation, Rich.
Right. But, having a teacher strapped with a 9mm taking out a crazed lunatic with a AR-15 with 100 rounds that's going 3,000 plus miles a second and tear holes the size of oranges in people versus a bullet that will just like pass right through, knocking butts.
Yeah. No, I the story broke yesterday about the sheriff's deputy, the school resource officer. We've had lots of stories in the past about school resource officers roughing up students. I remember a couple of kids, of course they were people of color, getting the bejesus worked over out of them by the school resource officer. They're very good at that sort of thing. But this guy stood around and didn't go in and confront the guy with the semi-automatic rifle.
And with good reason.
Well,
and with good reason.
I'm not going to stand in judgment of that guy.
That's right. You're right, because he knew better. He knew that he would be killed before he could get maybe two rounds off.
Well, unless he could sneak up on him.
Nah, yeah, that would happen. That's what happens in movies, not in real life.
But, I mean, if you think about it, and I'm, this is not a criticism, cops are kind of noisy. You know, they got all that, the leather utility belt, Batman stuff. Utility belt and everything on, and they kind of creak and they squeak and they... They're not like the Viet Cong sneaking up in pajamas and gym sneakers.
Right.
No. And that's the whole, that's the larger thing. And it's worth taking into account here.
You mean the cops, guy with a gun is not going to stop a bad guy with a gun?
Precisely. Precisely. The cops don't win because they're individually better with a gun. There are so many cases out there. All you have to do is look, and you'll find out. The cops win because they show up in overwhelming force. It's the Powell Doctrine, the military Powell Doctrine at work in policing. If you've got a guy with a gun, you bring 20 guys with 20 guns, and all 20 guns shoot the guy with one gun, and the cops win.
Right.
Whether they're doing it right or for right or wrong reasons, that's why they win. Overwhelming force. One guy with one gun against another guy with another gun, unless the cop can get the drop on him, no, I mean, because he's not going to stop in the hallway, and everything's going to get all Martin Scorsese, and there's going to be music and Sergio Leone movie music, and you know, with the whistling and the and there's no Gary Cooper Grace Kelly's not in an upper window with a fucking rifle either, okay? Our American mythology has us completely freaking bamboozled as to the reality of these situations. You know, and the very idea that Tangerine Tiberius would sit there and criticize the guy, you know, this is a chicken shit who had bone spurs. I mean, he spontaneously grew bone spurs at the mere thought of going to Vietnam.
Five times he grew bone spurs. That's a real medical miracle there.
Yeah, I mean, he should be in the literature. And, you know, there are... how often do bone spurs spontaneously go into remission?
I never heard of it. I'd have to see the...
And, of course, unfortunately, Dr. Ronnie didn't go looking for the bone spurs.
Well, that's because the patient was, a stable genius.
Yeah.
Here's a man that would crap his pants and somebody pointed a pea shooter at him.
Yeah.
Forget about a gun.
He's a coward. Yeah. He's always been a coward.
The whole Republican Party is cowards. They're all cowards. All right?
Every now and then I'll catch a clip from her and I'm like, oh, Joy, I'm kind of a fan. Joy Behar wore him out on The View.
Yeah, she's good.
She said, turns out there was an armed guard at the high school in Parkland who stayed outside while 17 people were fatally shot. Trump just called him a coward a few minutes ago. You think that's an appropriate thing to do? And then this. Do you think Trump would have gone into that building? Hell no!
Wait, Jose.
He'd have been running for his safe room at that tacky pile of bricks of his up the road at Mar-a-Lago.
That's right. No denying that. I mean, look, Bob, like I just said, the whole Republican Party is nothing but cowards, and he's the head coward. Every one of them is cowards. Dana Load of Shit, if she ever had even a 38 special pointed at her, would crap her pants.
Oh, no. As scurrilous as that gang of pig shits are, you know the one thing they're grateful for is that we don't have dueling in the United States anymore.
That's right.
Because if you ever called out Wayne the Peter, or if you ever called out Dana Lowe, that's good. Dana Lowe to shit. I mean, that's really good. If you ever did that, they'd be
Well, headed for the border.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they talk all this good shit about free. What really gets me the most pissed off, Bob, is how they misinterpret the Second Amendment. You know, it's dot, 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 and the right to keep and bear arms. What about the first half of that, about having a well-regulated militia? Even if it's not a militia, having well-regulated use of firearms. They don't want that. They only want the second half of the first, Second Amendment. So that tells you right there, they're not American. They don't even revere the whole amendment in its entirety.
No, they do not. They do not, Rich.
And even on MSNBC, when I'm listening to guys, you know, the last couple of days, they don't even point that. I haven't heard any of them point that out about how gross, even Chris Matthews, they don't point out the gross misrepresentation of the Second Amendment. I don't know why they don't. I mean, I could have seen
in part because the messaging of the NRA has sunk that far into our hides.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's sad. Not you, not me, not people listening on the horn. We get it. Okay? But for some reason, even the liberal media that I go to for my news doesn't. Like you say, they don't get it. They're still willing fools, dupes of dear leader Caesar Discussus. I mean, Geezer Discussus. I don't get it. I really don't, Bob. It's like, this is simple. The Second Amendment itself in its entirety should be embraced, and that way it would really change the whole paradigm we're in right now. But we can't get them to even say the whole amendment is what it's all about. Okay, they just don't do it.
Well, unfortunately, I think you're... But I started thinking about... You know, the precious little the precious little booger eaters and Trump pansies and maggots and so forth and NRA scum, they get a, well, that's not a maggot, that's not a clip, you goddamn ignoramus, that's a magazine. I don't care what it is, it held enough bullets to kill 17 children, you fuckwit. And they don't, but. We're getting lost in the weeds of terminology.
Yeah.
You know, assault weapon, assault rifle, AR-15,
yeah.
high capacity rifle, high capacity weapon. Bullshit. Let's make this easy. Let's get Hemingway-esque. War guns.
Uh-huh.
These are war guns.
Yep.
Okay, whatever I may think of a Glock 19, it ain't a war gun.
I lost you there for a second.
Whatever I may think of a Glock 19, it ain't a war gun. Whatever I may think of an 8-inch barreled 44 Magnum Clint Eastwood special,
yeah,
it ain't a war gun.
No.
Okay. A Browning 30-06 with a glass beaded barrel rested stainless barreled bullshit bolt action synthetic stock. It's a deer hunting rifle.
Right.
It's not a war weapon.
Right. Exactly.
You know, a 12 gauge turkey gun is not a war weapon.
Right.
If a weapon, Rich, is designed for the purpose and at the behest of the federal government for purposes of placing into the hands of government servants sworn by oath to do the bidding of the government, in other words, the military,
right,
it's a war gun.
Yep. WG-15. That's what they should call it. WG-15.
War gun. Yeah.
That's right. You know, and like, you know, did you happen to catch Lawrence O'Donnell last night?
As a matter of fact, I did.
All right. I mean, the idea that the velocity, the exit velocity from the barrel of an AR-15 is 3,182 feet per second, as opposed to one third of that being like on a Glock or a 9mm or a 44 Magnum, like being one third of that. Okay? I mean, people don't understand how physics comes in huge in this whole equation with weapons of war or just regular firearms. They have no conception of physics because we're a country that's turning its back on science. Okay? We are a country that's going backwards when it comes to knowledge, when it comes to the thirst for knowledge, when it comes to the quest for knowledge. When I was at my doctor's office today, I had a book with me I was reading. Yeah, I had my smartphone with me, but everybody around me, there was about 9 or 10 people there, they all had their face buried in their smartphone. We're becoming a nation of ignoramuses, all right? Hooked on our smartphones, learning nothing, going backwards in evolution. And this is what they want. This is what dear leader and his scum want. They want us to go backwards to their level.
They look, Rich, they want to tear what is left of our country to pieces.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And ultimately, they want to destroy whatever civil society we have.
Exactly.
And they want authoritarian, despotic totalitarianism.
That's right.
And in the end, they want to be the ones, they want their people doing the dictating.
I mean, the whole idea of their story.
Look, there's a reason the Russians passed all those rubles through the NRA.
Yeah.
I mean, the Russians weren't passing rubles through Planned Parenthood.
Right.
They passed the rubles through the NRA. The Russians weren't passing rubles through the Civil Society Institute.
Right.
They were passing rubles through the NRA.
And I'll bet you that we were able to do an accounting right now of the NRA TV atrocity that's on the air now. We'd find it's all Russian, pretty much all Russian money behind that.
It may very well be the case.
I mean, we have no way of knowing at this point because, that hasn't come into, like, investigation by Mueller. That probably won't be part of any investigation by Mueller, but the layers of the onion are getting peeled, like, unbelievable all of a sudden. It's going at speed of light rate to me, my opinion right now. Another conviction today. It's getting closer to geezer disgusts, but then something's going to happen. We're going to have some kind of Reichstag fire thing is going to happen at some point.
It all depends on the degree to which his paranoia controls him. But anyway, hey, Rich, we got to get started on Friday on the Front Porch. It's been nice talking to you, man. Have yourself a great weekend.
I will talk to you in the next couple of weeks again, Bob. God bless.
All right, you take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. It's our buddy Rich up in New Jersey. It's about 10 minutes past the hour. We will take a brief break and fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Again, if you've never participated, fire up Skype and then send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, all one word, and he'll get you into the program. And we usually have a rousing, Jim Dandy good conversation at the end of the week here. This is listener-supported conversation radio, and this is a long-distance dedication, and it's a real long-distance dedication because it's going all the way out to Billy Graham in hell. Yes, indeed. A long-distance dedication for Billy, courtesy of the Horn. We'll be right back.
All you Mormons who like cussing, you are going to hell. All you preachers who like fucking, you are going to hell. Little boys that choke.
dinosaurs went to hell. Hell, 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 it's a wonderful place. It's a place of fire and brimstone. All you Christian politicians, you are going to hell. Magic Jesus apparitions send you to hell. Buddhist monks without God, you are going to hell. Those of you dissecting frogs, you are going to hell. Hell, 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 it's a wonderful place. It's a place of fire and brimstone.
Absolutely. Then again, God only knows what the little demons are doing, Billy Graham, even as we speak. Because, see, he never really understood what the whole Christianity thing was about. He just saw it as a nice way to make a living. But that song, by the way, is by the Bastard Fairies. We're All Going to Hell, and the video of it is absolutely precious and well worth your time. And as a moment of irony, why, thank you, Rhonda. Thank you. In the chat room, Rhonda says, "Bob, you apostate, you." Yes, I am. The beautiful, it's a goddess of irony bonus. That video is ages old. And the animation is precious, and it includes a picture of whom? No, not Billy Graham. Donald J. Trump. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's run over to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and check in with Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Are you trying to blow my mind or something?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's kind of, that song's kind of acidy, I guess. Why? What's going on?
Oh, I don't know. I vaped some stuff, and I was drifting back to my childhood days since you brought up Billy Graham.
Wait, you were famously raised unreligious. Are you saying that you got dragged off?
No, wait. You got to hear this story.
Okay. Go, man.
We lived in this house that was built in 1915 in Willows, California. This was from like 1957 to 1963. And we had a black and white TV over in the corner of the room. And we only got three TV stations. So once in a while, you flip on the TV station, and here is the Billy Graham Crusade. My dad liked to come unglued out of his feet. You damn near busted television.
Good for your dad, you know?
He used to just tell me, he says, that goddamn con artist is on TV.
Oh, I tell you, you know what? We've got a saying in the South, Sparky. You was raised right. You absolutely were. Yeah. Hey, where'd Billable Rick go? Did he run away, or did he get disappeared because of his?
Am I on y'all?
Ah, there he is. Because I was worried. I thought maybe your 666 Billy Graham challenge had caused you to be transmogrified to hell or something.
Well, maybe that'll happen. I don't know. I mean, if, you know, the Lord works in mysterious ways, right?
Well, I was thinking maybe you'd been at a Billy Graham crusade last weekend or something, and that, you know, maybe that's why.
I don't think he's been doing a lot of crusades lately, you know?
No, I don't think so either.
Speaking of 666, what the hell was that jacket you were wearing out in front of the 666 building you were all flipping off in that picture?
It's called a very warm jacket.
You look like the damn Michelin man or something.
You know what? I may have looked like the Michelin man, but I was the Michelin man who was not at all cold. I was wearing less clothing than anybody else in the group, and yet I was warmer. That's the that is the awesome, not to be beyond compare, ultralight down coat from Patagonia.
Oh, okay.
Technically, I think they call it the ultralight down hoodie.
I mean, what's with all the ribs in it?
Well, those are channels for the down.
Oh.
And it, the neat thing is it's 800 fill power down, and I've been out in like 0 degrees in that thing with nothing but a shirt under it and warm as toast. And it packs into its own pocket. Wow, this is an unpaid product placement for Patagonia, a company I deeply respect. But it packs into its own pocket so that it practically disappears into your bag when you're traveling. There's no bulk to it at all.
I should have one in the man cave that I can pull out on days like this.
Yeah, what's the temperature out there right now?
Cold. It's like a refrigerator, and I don't want any to burn any propane.
Really? I thought spring had sprung.
It did, and then all of a sudden Mother Nature played a freaking trick on us.
Winter finally arrived in February in California, Bob.
Yeah.
Apparently...
There's this one kind of tree here. It's all over the place, and it's one white blossoms on them, and there's one straight across the street as I look out. It's all in bloom.
That ain't gonna last.
Out, you know, where the blooms open up.
Yeah.
And then this cold hit, and it now they say it's freaked out the almond trees.
Oh, the there's some, you know, there's some profiteering trader on the almond futures market who's gonna make a killing. Oh, probably betting that almonds are going to go sky high next year or something like that. But no,
it's front page news here.
Oh, I know. But the reason I asked how cold it was is, you can't that coat of mine. You can't wear it much above 50 degrees, or you'll just burn up. So Patagonia makes different kinds of down. They got a down shirt that's 600 fill power that's great for, like, you know, 60 degrees down to 40 degrees or so. That thing will, and if you put like a waterproof shell on over top of that thing, it's a furnace. You can't get cold.
But you ought to run over to Patagonia.com and have a look, Sparky. They got a big sale going on between now and the 28th.
Heck, by the time I order it, it'll be warm again. It'll be out of my mind. Besides, I can always walk into the house and be nice and warm.
True, but I tell you what, it...
Gotta keep this house warm, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, in my case, I gotta keep the house cool. Like I said, I'm running the air conditioner right now, in February, in West Virginia. I mean, that's where all your warm weather went. I've got it right now.
How'd it get there?
It was 75. It was 75 degrees in New York City Wednesday.
Oh, I know what that's like. I remember when I went to New York in 2006, it was like 72 degrees the day we went to the Statue of Liberty.
A week from today, which will be March the 2nd, a week from today, the projected high is 48 here. That's as cold as it gets for the next 9 days. I mean, it's nuts. I've been around here long enough to sort of have a sense for weather patterns, and it's not unusual this time of year in Appalachia to get like one day, two tops of perfect bluebird 72 degrees, just so all the college kids will come out in shorts and tank tops in Morgantown and get pneumonia, so they'll be nice and sick by the time finals roll around. But I've not experienced anything like this. It's been, we're having a good bit of rain and spring. I mean, pretty soon, much more of this, and the jonquils will start coming up, and the ramps will poke their little leafy heads out from the soil. And, I mean, I said on February 2nd, Sparky, I said, I don't know how that groundhog saw his shadow, as cloudy as it was. But this probably means that, as the old saying goes, March will come in like a lamb. And that means it'll go out. What I think it's...
You had it right, Bob.
Yeah, in like a lamb, out like a bastard.
Michael.
Oh, badger. Okay.
Bastard.
Yeah,
bastard.
Come April, we'll get a foot of snow.
Yeah,
I've
because
got a theory about that groundhog. I think he's been having some Pappy Van Winkle shots myself.
Well, I think he's on
the take. Before he looks at his shadow, you know?
Nah, it's simpler than that. He's just on the take.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, he's up there, you know. He's up there in the hills in Pennsylvania where they have those mob meetings and stuff. But, I mean, we got a standing rule around here. You do not plant your garden in Appalachia until after Mother's Day. If you get a frost after Mother's Day, it's surprising.
We're always April 15th. Yeah, ours is tax day in the Georgia Mountains. We even had ice on the dog pond today.
Is that where the dog swims, Sparky, or what?
Yeah, that's, he doesn't really actually swim. He gets his feet in there and then he splashes himself.
Okay, got it.
After he does a long run of chasing the ball.
Mm-hmm.
He goes off. Goes yeah. over there and splashes himself and gets a drink at the same time.
That's cool.
It's just one of those little plastic kiddie pools. With the little fish in the bottom and everything.
Oh, so, no, you mean after a long session of subduing the ball and protecting the house from the ball, yes. That's not Grady just playing. I mean, he's protecting you guys.
Really?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
I know the Labrador Retriever mindset. Absolutely. So
yeah. A doorbell's what sets him off in here, in the house.
Oh, and they have a prodigious bark too. It's a beautiful thing.
Oh, yeah, it scares the shit out of anybody that comes through the door. And then you have to tell him, oh, he wouldn't hurt a flea.
No, a Labrador Retriever's bark is very much like the sound of a shotgun shell being chambered in a pump shotgun. That sound alone is impressive.
Oh, you want to hear that sound? I can give you that sound effect now.
Oh, really?
The pump shotgun walked back in the door this week.
Oh, where it had been? Where had it been?
Oh, yeah, I gave it away to my stepson. But he brought it back, along with a couple other shotguns and two rifles, and a big old hog leg that's not in the house, it's out in the trailer they brought.
Oh, wow, okay, 12-gauge?
Yeah, there's a turkey gun, Remington Wingmaster, and my old 20-gauge.
Yeah, the turkey guns are generally shorter barrels, right?
Yeah, well, this one's all camouflaged and everything.
Sure, yeah. I know the sort.
His varmint gun.
Yeah, what is that, a 220, 223?
Oh, did you happen to see Lawrence last night?
Yeah, that's what Rich in Jersey was asking me. Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay. The speed is 2,182 miles per hour.
Yeah. Works out to some 3,000 plus feet per second. Right.
Yeah. You know what I compare that to?
SR-71?
Yeah. You know what it flew, the speed record?
No.
2,193 miles an hour. But that's at over 100,000 feet. Less friction.
Well, the thing is with muzzle velocity, it falls off, and it depends on how you view these terms. It falls off relatively quickly because that, you know, the initial charge is all that's propelling it. But that 3,000 feet per second is, that means that bullet on straight and unhindered can travel almost a mile in a second. 3/5 of a mile in a second. That's a lot of power. And it's a lot of destructive force.
Okay, I got people hanging out at the door. I better let them in.
Okay. Well, we'll continue the conversation until you return. Oh, there's...
No, I mean the Skype door.
Oh, the Skype door. Yeah, there's Tracy. Yeah, I mean, just to give people an idea of the of comparative muzzle velocities, you know, a .45 caliber pistol round, that's a great big bus of a bullet. And the muzzle velocity—it's surprising to see the muzzle velocity on a .45 caliber round get much up over 900 feet per second. But it's carrying a lot of kinetic force because of the mass of the bullet. And Lawrence was relying on the article from the Atlantic by the woman who is a radiology on-call ER doc at the hospital where some of these kids were brought. And yeah, the purpose of the AR-15 is to do maximum damage with minimum minimum of material. A 223 caliber bullet, there's actually a NATO expression for it in metric terms, but it's basically a 223. That's a 22 caliber bullet, for all intents and purposes. It is a small round, but because of the explosive force with which it is propelled, it does tremendous damage. And as a result, what it hits tends to get ruined. among other things, by the cavitation that forms in the wake of the bullets travel through, you know, whatever matter it hits. And of course, bullets tumble, and they break up, and they fall apart. And in the case of a 220, an AR-15 round, whatever it hits, it destroys. And in the long run, it's an economical round, because it means you can do a lot more destruction with a lot less bullet. It's designed to military specifications. There's nobody out there who ever said, well, you know, if you want to do your maximum kill damage when you're deer hunting, this is specifically for the purpose of killing people efficiently.
Do you ever shoot one?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's not much recoil to it. It's easy.
16.
But it's not worth a shit. It's not worth a shit for deer hunting.
No, I didn't want to ever shoot one again after the last time I shot an M16.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Just it psychologically wasn't a rifle to me. It was something else.
Yeah. Oh, you mean like a weapon?
Yeah.
Remember when that asshole from the NRA a few months back, we had the clip of him, why do they keep calling them weapons? They're tools. Well, this is why.
They're tools. The only purpose is to kill people.
I say the NRA is the tool of the Republican Party is the tool of the NRA, since we're talking about tools here, huh?
Well, every gun is made to kill something.
Well, yeah,
purpose of it.
I mean, that's in the nature of weaponry generally.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes all the way back to the earliest era, you know, when Og picked up a rock and cronked Gurg in the head with it. The rock became a weapon. The rock was a tool for achieving an end. And I don't mean that to sound all NRA. By the way, we have any future references to the NRA. If we have to actually say the words that NRA stands for, it's the National Ruble Association.
Oh, I thought it was not relevant anymore.
No, National Ruble Association.
Okay.
Or National Russian Association.
That guy you're talking about that was blaming the media yesterday.
Yeah.
For all this. Well, one of my favorite bands, actually the favorite band of mine, band called Chevelle. Are you familiar with them? Hard rock.
Don't think so. No.
Okay. Well, they're from the Chicago area, and they have a song that I really, really like not because of the lyrics or anything, but because it just rocks. I mean, it just rocks. It's a headbanger song. It's called "Take Out the Gunman." So lately, recently I found out, and they admitted this in interviews, that is about the media's coverage of shootings. So they didn't outright say they're blaming the media, but I feel like it's like the same kind of flavor of rhetoric.
Well, look, I mean? the media, John, are caught. They have a job to do. On the other hand, there are legitimate critiques. You know, the old saying, if it bleeds, it leads, has been extant in journalism for a hell of a long time.
And I think it's wrong. I think that's what's wrong with journalism. Katie Couric has talked about this.
Well,
you know,
Katie Couric's an idiot, but never mind. no, I mean, just an idiot.
You'll get emails for that.
I don't care. I mean, she's a dumbass. But I mean,
you can't consider her a journalist, can you?
No, not any. No, she's no more a journalist than Matt Lauer was a journalist. Just
remember
not.
His how remember that fucking forum or whatever it was, the military forum thing that he hosted, and he was so fucking against Hillary and like propped up Trump. Well, there's a picture on Wikipedia of him receiving the Medal of Friendship or whatever, straight from Putin. Literally. Check it.
Nice. But no, the media. I hate that word, first of all, the media.
Yeah, me too.
Because that encompasses everything from Mad Magazine to the New York Times to the National Enquirer to Fox. Legitimate, honest-to-God, no-kidding journalism is caught between Scylla and Charybdis because they have a duty to report. And if they don't report on these things, I mean, do we actually think that these events would happen less if the media, if journalists didn't report on them? I mean, is that an argument that can be sustained? That wasn't.
Bob, I think an argument could be made that, you know, one of the reasons that these shooters do what they do is they want to become infamous. And by having their name trotted out there in the media, instead of just calling them, you know, the goddamn shooter, you know, that would probably be better rather than identify them by name. In Canada, when there's infamous crimes like this, I don't think the media, I think there's like a blackout on the news as to crimes. I know there is as to actual criminal cases that are, you know, that are being prosecuted, you know. So I think to some extent you do get some crazies that maybe crave that attention.
Yeah, but publishing,
you know,
the name
publishing
the name of John Wilkes Booth didn't bring on a spate of president killing.
Well, that's true. But that's apples and oranges, Bob. I mean, we're in a whole new media environment now. You know, compared to just newspapers. I mean, we're talking electronic media, instantaneous communication,
video games.
Yeah. Things go worldwide so quickly. Oh, the video games. You think that's it? Yeah, right. I think it's a mental illness. That's the. No, I think it's too many fucking guns. I think that's been established by any, you know, there was an article by the New York Times that came out about how, they basically controlled for all the other factors across nationally and found that it was just the amount of guns in the U.S. that's the problem.
Hey, John, you're going to have to mute, buddy. Oh, okay.
I took care of it.
Yeah, but see, it's not just massacres. And by the way, I much prefer the word massacre to the word mass shooting, because like I said, it sounds like somebody walked into a Catholic church and went wild, or, you know, blew away a priest. No, it's a fucking massacre. And let's use our effective words.
And it clearly
but
was
if you, but
the
if
Valentine's
you,
but Day massacre.
But if
you know?
Yeah, but if you have a firearm in the home, the odds go up dramatically that there will be a firearm injury or death in your home. Okay, if there's a firearm in your home, there's more likely to be a suicide in your home. If there's a firearm in your home, you're more likely to have a firearm accident in your home.
Not if there's no ammunition.
Yeah, I don't know if that holds up.
Hey, if there's still no bullets in the house, how are you going to make a gun work?
They can be bought and brought in.
Well, they ain't coming into my house.
That you know of.
Well, I'll know of.
There may be one stashed in the chamber you're unaware of.
That's what got my brother.
I checked them all before put them away.
Stuck in the chamber, maybe.
Right. One of the most dangerous guns is the one that's unloaded. You know, I've always heard that, so.
Well,
Bob, I got a question I want to toss out there. This has been eating at me, if you don't mind.
Well, you know, get it, but don't let it eat on. Don't. That can be dangerous. There can be infections, and then you wind up taking antibiotics for weeks. I mean, yeah, don't do that.
Well, I've so been there, done that. And I don't mean to sound superficial, but I would like to get the Horn's input. When you first seen Dina Lash, what was your first impression? I mean, before you even hear or speak, or what came to mind? What went right past your frontal lobe and went right to the cerebral? For me, it was more like Demi Moore in Disclosure, or Elizabeth Bathory, or the Dragon Lady, or Vampire, or a succubus.
Are you talking specifically yesterday?
No, when you first seen her. The first time I seen this woman was CNN town hall.
Because yesterday, my first thought was Adam Ant tribute band.
There's just something evil incarnate about her.
Oh, come on. I can't get a laugh for that?
Well, give yourself
a fucking maniac. She's a maniac.
Her
name is actually Dana Lush, is it not?
It's pronounced Lush. I looked it up today.
I'll call her Lush.
I call her Dana Lush because she talks like somebody who's wasted out of her mind.
I'm just wondering if I'm off my nut, or did she strike? Did she grab anybody?
She cultivates that. I had the story last night, for instance. She went after the producer of a show and of some TV show 10 years ago and pitched the idea that she would be a beautiful far-right talk radio host, and people will watch because they hate me, and people will watch because they lust after me. And dude was like,
"Say what?
Go home."
I disagree with that second part of that statement.
No, really,
she scared me.
No, really, Tracy, she is trying to, and that's part of the reason that I'm sorry. Look. It's the real world, okay? We can't always hide from issues of sex and gender. And the NRA gave her a job as communications official spokescreep of the National Ruble Association because she brings sex appeal to the job, okay? Well, wingnuts love that shit. It's like Sarah Palin winking. You remember that? 10 years ago, you remember the Sarah Palin wink, and all the little booger eating, tea bagging, right wing booger eaters got little booger eating stiffies. Remember that?
Oh yeah. Well, I heard a part of her speech that she did in front of CPAC about how, you know, blaming the media and saying how nothing sells better than white mothers crying. She actually said, and I heard it this morning on Good Morning America, and Robin Roberts actually got real black.
Really? ABC will tolerate that, will they?
Well, she got, because when they played that clip, and then Robin Roberts got real pissed. Like, this, she was a step away from saying, this bitch here, and I know we're trying to stay, but, you know, this motherfucker, how dare she say that the media is, you know, is to blame for this? But for her to stand up there and say, you know, white mothers crying sells. And then it made me think about all the black mothers that are crying every day when their kids get killed or what have you. But see, we don't sell.
Oh, but Tracy, she tried to do that. And I mean, I watched the whole thing yesterday, and she said, you know, where's the, and she's, you know, she's so butch. You know, it's like I got a note from Jack just now. What comes to mind when first seeing Dana Lush speaking at CPAC? Riding crop. Agnes saw her and said, that woman's got a side job as a dom.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, because there she was with her little constitutional convention outfit. Again, you march Wayne LaPierre out wearing something like that, any credibility he has is effing gone. But by virtue of her gender, she can wear it out there, and it's just adorable. She looks like she looks like Thomas Jefferson getting ready to go rape Sally Hemings some more.
Well, I don't frighten easily, but my first visceral reaction when I seen her on CNN, I don't know what the hell she was wearing. She scared the hell out of me before she even opened her yap.
Well, yeah, that's, but that's all marketing, Steve. That turns maggots on. The women want to be her, and the maggot guys want to
do her.
Yeah, or be spanked.
Oh, God.
Or something.
I didn't know.
Remember, we've got a president who enjoyed being spanked by Stormy Daniels because he'd been a naughty Donnie.
Yeah.
Oh, you were great. That spanking was great. You remind me of my daughter Ivanka.
No!
But Sarah Palin is probably just as equally evil.
Oh.
And I'm sorry, Trace, I don't mean to walk on you, but the point I was trying to make is Sarah Palin is probably equally evil, but I didn't get that reaction the first time I seen her. So it's not to dwell on it. I'm just wanted to throw it out there. So.
But Tracy, if I can, because again, you know, you're here, so you know your job, right?
Yeah, am I speaking for all women or all black people?
No, you're speaking for all black women in America. And
okay,
and some black men.
Okay.
So
yes,
this Coleon Noir dude.
Oh yeah, I heard last night, I did listen to the show last night, and that's self-hating Negro.
I mean, dude's got a law degree. Dude knows how to tie a necktie, but he shows up with his Black Freedom T-shirt and his snapback hat, and you know he I don't know if he's West Coast or East Coast, but I mean he's definitely he's hip to the youth urban culture.
Right. When I hear people like that speak, it hurts my heart because you got to wonder. What happened to you, bruh? Because I can't imagine that he was raised that way. It's like Clarence Thomas, you know, you go away to school and you get hit with the white folks and they think they're letting them into the secret club, but you'll never know the secret handshake. You will never be one of them. You are a token. You are a toy. You are a tool. So they can say, look, we aren't racist. We got a black guy. And he's, you know, he's walking the walk and talking the talk. But it's, you got to listen when I heard what he was saying last night, it took everything I had to hold down my dinner. Because I'm just like, wow, it's just, I cannot imagine hating being black so much that I would join the NRA or talk like he spoke yesterday or whenever that was that yesterday. And then to call himself, what was his last name, Noir? Or Noir?
Yeah,
what?
N-O-I-R.
Really, bro? It's like, oh.
Well, okay, let's be clear. You know why he has to be Coleon Noir? I'll tell you.
Tell me. Please tell me.
Because his real name.
Oh, God, what is his real name?
Is Collins Idehen, I-D-E-H-E-N. And you can't be having no Muslimy-sounding name and be working for the National Ruble Association.
No, 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 no. No, 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 no. So he changed his name. Of course he did, because nobody would name, well...
And
I thought his name was Boris Milushnikov or something
that. And his first name is Collins, just plain old Collins. 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 But now he's Coleon. Coleon.
Where is he from?
Houston.
He's from Texas? Really?
Yeah.
Well, what did you say on the last porch, Bob? As long as the check clears, right?
Well, I mean that's good. Everybody got to get paid. But see, he gives himself
and okay, Tracy, please don't hate. I mean, I don't want even. So he's got a plain old board. I mean, do you have any idea how many white Collinses there are out there? Okay,
that's a whole lot.
So instead, he's going to be Coleon. Sounds a little like Leon, but it's Coleon, and it you know, maybe, you know, maybe that's a rare, little known African dialect. Okay, Idahen probably is. But he couldn't use Idahen because, well, you know, that ain't going to sell among the, because see, his purpose is not necessarily to bring black folks into the NRA. It's to allow the NRA, the cracker ass membership to say, see, it's like what happened years ago when I went back to my Baptist church for the first time, and bless her heart, the old lady that I'd known for years said, "Oh, we've grown so much at the church. We have a Negro family in our church now."
Heavens.
But that made the rest of the church family feel so much better, because it meant they weren't racists anymore.
They weren't racist anymore.
So, you know, this is the institutional, Coleon Noir is the institutional equivalent of the NRA saying, or of, you know, your average Klansman saying, "I have black friends. Look at Coleon over there.
Look at Coleon."
And Coleon just waves.
Well, it's like that black guy that I've seen that was at a Trump rally, holding up the sign, "Blacks for Trump."
Yeah, he's a religious maniac. There's a backstory on dude.
See, you know, just because a couple of us, you know, black folks support that fool, doesn't mean that all of us do. Because I don't know any black people that I know personally that support Trump. We're still worried about that they're going to pass out spears and bones and send us to Africa.
Wait a minute.
So that's what they're...
Sorry. You get a cowbell for that, Tracy. You just do.
Because they're trying. I mean, you know, out here, you know, you heard your boy, you know, talk about yesterday about taking ICE from out of California. And, like, I'm going to be upset about that.
Why?
I'm not.
Oh.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not. It's like, you know, really? And, you know, because, and then.
Well, I do live over 400 miles, like 480 miles away from you. North, due north.
Yeah, so you're not really worried about border control up there, I know.
You've been through my hometown.
Yes, I have. I drove right through there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. So I had an interesting conversation today with my sister, who, you know, her husband is a Trump supporter. And we were talking about this whole thing about, you know, because she went and saw Black Panther. And, of course, like me, we were the only black people in the theater. Everybody else was white. And we were talking about how the racists were going around telling, you know, white people went to the movies, they would be attacked. And we both said the only thing I was worried about was somebody coming, you know, a white person coming into the theater and shooting it up. And then she says, "Well, I'm not worried about that because my husband has a concealed weapons permit and he carries his gun everywhere we go." And I'm like, oh.
Great. Gunfight at the OK Corral.
I just shook my head and it said, and she has a concealed weapons permit as well.
Does she have a Freedom Protector bra? Or a Freedom Protector purse?
She does.
Get out.
She doesn't carry it everywhere they go, but he does. That's what happens up in Oregon. Oh. And come to find out, they have assault rifles, too. And I just said, are you sure you're still a Democrat? And she's like, of course I am. I'm like, okay. But she, I think she's one of those people that thinks that if you have a gun, like, you know, I didn't ask because I was afraid to hear the answer because I love my sister and I don't want to, you know, not, you know, have a problem with her anymore. But I was afraid to ask what she felt about teachers having guns. I want to ask my brother, who is actually a teacher. And I already know what his answer is going to be. But, you know, when she said that, it just kind of took me aback. I'm like, really? Do you really think that if a person has a gun in a dark theater and somebody comes in shooting, how are you going to know who to shoot? And are you going to not, and are you so sure of your marksmanship that you're not going to accidentally hit somebody else when you're trying to take out the shooter? Am I off base with this?
No, you're right on base.
They've proven it with the demonstrations.
Yeah, the all of this talk about, you know, somebody else with a gun is going to... Because it flies in the face of the nature of ambush. Ambush says dude is going to get some rounds off. Anybody who did any kind of infantry work in Vietnam knows this. Anybody who did infantry work in Iraq, Afghanistan knows this. When there is an ambush up, they get to shoot first.
Exactly.
Unless you discover the ambush. And if it takes a lot of work to discover an ambush, and some of it's just dumb luck. So if we're going to turn America's schools into counter-ambush patrols, then they're just not schools anymore. And maybe that's part of it, Tracy. Because part and parcel of all of this is that, I mean, I remember Jerry Falwell, who I'm sure has already welcomed Billy Graham to hell. I remember when Jerry Falwell said we need to get government out of schools and get schools back in the hands of religion where it belongs.
When was school ever in the hands of religion?
Forever.
Not here.
No, but the
not in California.
No, but the ancient origins of education are that it was in the hands of whatever the religion was.
And now that I think about it, back when slaves were set free, most of the people when they got educated were through churches.
Right.
That's church schools, and that's where a lot of colleges were built, were from religion. So you're right. Okay, I got you.
And so the Republican Party generally despises public education in the first place. So this is a great way to completely destroy public. We're sorry. We can't have public education anymore because it's just too dangerous for our children. But, oh, my God, you know, one of the things that has actually just, I'm sorry if I shouldn't be amazed, but how well-spoken these students are.
I love the ones that confront them.
They have to have some excellent teachers there.
And they're probably reasonably well-funded.
I think it's a well-to-do suburb.
Well, I think I had someone tell me last week or early this week that was voted the safest city in Florida? Parkland?
2 years ago, that's correct.
So that, you know, that has some meaning. But these kids are very well spoken. They are so much better spoken than, say, the kids who get a 12th grade education up the road here from me.
They got a great website set up for the march.
I know the Republicans think it's all George Soros, but Gucci has given a bunch of money
to these young people to help them set up their organizing.
Well, they got a donate button right on their website.
Oprah, George Clooney, they're all chunking in, so.
Like half a meal.
Yep, half a rock. That's correct.
Hey, Bob, you were talking about Enterprise the other day on Twitter. Now they jumped they're cutting ties with the NRA now. So that and one more, a couple more. So that's good. That you know, it's funny that you every time you mention something, something happens like that in the right direction. You know.
Oh yeah, there's a list. Like, let's see.
Going after FedEx.
Yeah, Hertz is is out. Avis is out. Budget's out. Enterprise is out. National's out. Alamo is out. LifeLock is out. Norton Symantec is out. MetLife is out. What's interesting is who's still in. FedEx has not bailed yet. And it maybe there's a sound economic reason for this. Starkey Labs. And this one kind of meant something to me because the in-ear monitors that I use when I'm not using regular cans, these are actually molded to fit the insides of my ears. My in-ear monitors are by Starkey, and they're excellent. But they're a hearing aid manufacturer.
Okay.
And the last I checked, I think they're privately held, and the guy's a Democrat. Or I got the idea that he was a Democrat. I mean,
there's a lot. Dude, I'm canvassing for my friend who's running for state rep, and we ran into a staunch Democrat who said, "Look, I'm an NRA member." He said, "But I don't like Trump, and I don't like the Republican Party, but I'm an NRA member." And his wife, who is like a real progressive Democrat, started arguing with him right in front of us about it. They were young people. And stuff, and you know, but some it's because there is Democrats that people identify Democrats as Democrats that are NRA members and shit. It's weird.
Well, it is, and but, any Democrat who's a member of the NRA isn't paying attention. Because
ask them why they're an NRA member. NRA isn't doing anything for them.
Hell no, all they care about is the advertising money that they get, or not revenue, but profits, whatever, that they get from the gun manufacturers. That's where they get a lot. That's where it all started, really. They used to be like a Field and Stream kind of thing, right?
Well, look, the origins of the NRA, and this is the truth, the NRA was founded in New York in the ashes of the Civil War, when statistics became available showing the degree to which Union soldiers had not fired their weapons, or if they had fired their weapons, had not fired them well.
Okay.
And so the purpose was to teach firearms competency.
Didn't know that.
And firearm safety.
Did not know that. They don't do that anymore. Hell no, they're maniacs now.
Well, they were downright boring up into the 70s, but then they were weaponized by the Republican Party. With again, it's another one of those moments where you point to the advent of Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, it all goes back to him. A lot of bullshit. The dying of unions sort of goes back to him. 401k, 401, like you know, I'll not to like. Off the trail here, but I just got hired for it's a defense contractor, but it's kind of them one of them things where I just don't there's nothing in my area to that you know I'm going to be making fully double what I'm making now, because apparently killing machines are worth a lot of money, or it pays well to build destruction. I don't know. But, you know, it's a lot of things go back to Ronald Reagan, though. You know, like And 401k can be traced back to that. And you know, what's really bullshit about 401k, it's a huge scam to the point where it should be criminal. Like my dad said that when he was in the 80s, his company that he worked for got rid of pensions. They sold the pension plans to buy this, you know, to do the 401k thing. And they said, you're going to be investing in the stock market, essentially. You could be a millionaire by the time you retire. Care to guess what he gets a month for 401k? $300.
Yeah, it didn't work out, did it?
$300 a month. Can you freaking believe that? That's criminal. And that goes back to Reagan. And you're right. And then NRA seems to go, the whole weaponization of the NRA.
Well, and
that wasn't around.
If you'll pardon me for a little bit of a mini filibobster here. And by the way, I just got a call in from somewhere in Illinois. And I can't add you to the conversation. If you want on the conversation for Friday on the Front Porch, you need to use Skype, and you need to send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, on Skype. Sparky will admit you and then show you how to get in. I wish I could. Someday we'll be able to add more phones, but that's a $3,000 fundraiser out there. Before I go down my little rabbit hole, Ron looked it up, Ron and Raleigh. Median income in Parkland, Florida is $126,906 per year. So they probably do have some good schools.
Yeah, they got a tax base.
Yeah. Even Florida, which doesn't like taxes. But the kids are very well spoken. And they are... And they know how to self activate with social media and stuff like that. And I can.
What about
only,
the kids that? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I can only wish them the best.
And, what about the kids that were at this this gathering that Trump had, this listening session? Did you hear what some of them were saying though? Some were saying things like, "You're such a great leader. You're moving this country into a great in a good direction." Or I like the. Something about a positive direction.
Yeah, those were probably...
They were hand-selected.
Yeah, those were plants.
I'm not rooting on them because they're going through a hard time. I'm a school shooting survivor. No shit, dude.
I didn't know
My
that.
School
didn't
got
know.
Shot up. Yeah, Red Lion, or I don't know if you may have heard about this. Back in 2003, my principal got shot. A kid brought in two handguns. I was attending the... You know, I was there... Actually, I was walking to school, but I'm still a school shooting survivor. But at the time, but yeah, a student brought in two handguns, a 44 Magnum and a 22, pulled the 44 Magnum out, shot the principal in the chest. That he died instantly. And then while everybody was running out of the school, he turned the gun on or he pulled the 22 out and shot himself then. And yeah, that you probably heard about this on the news. It was on CNN, but yeah. Yeah, it was. I often sometimes forget about that. And my friend brought that up to me the other day, who was walking to school with me at the time that it happened. He said, "Remember, we were talking about this." He goes, "We're school shooting survivors." And I thought, "Holy shit, he's right." I never thought about it that way until this kind of stuff has been going on. But yeah, shot up, and the guy had brought in a gun and shot the principal in 2003. April of 2003. I remember that what was the most interesting about it all, or not interesting, but the most notable thing about it was the aftermath. The aftermath was what I remember the most, like what really sticks in my head. You know what I mean? That's what I remember the most, you know, how the school reacted to this. And that's when we saw, you never saw cops at schools around where I'm at. Now every school has like a bunch of cops there, pretty much. And
who,
I guess apparently
who, that is, we have found out don't do much by the way of prevention.
Even though they're a good guy with a gun, though. You know what I mean? So
yeah, they're yeah. Hoping they serve a deterrent function, but in terms of opposing an active shooter, not so much. Yeah, I don't care.
So was there a cop there already there at Parkland?
Oh yeah, they have a school resource officer.
Every school pretty much has one, right?
But who knows how one would respond until you are actually in that situation. Everything goes down so fast.
High schools do. That's.
And for Trump to deflect on him, I thought was just beyond the pale. They're just looking for
to take the focus off
of guns.
But the county sheriff gooned on him, too.
Yeah, yep.
But the fact of the fact of the matter is, usually if cops don't have overwhelming force, they don't behave particularly aggressively. Look at Eric Garner. Tamir Rice, there's two cops in a car, not one cop. You know, they're very good at taking down people not their own size. And that's not me gooning on cops, it's just a reality. But I was going to kind of wander off down a rabbit hole real quick, because I mentioned something last night, and then Scott and I were conversing afterward. He said, I hope you'll try to sort it out. I just have this nagging sense that something changed. Something happened. I said it last night. Something happened to our culture. And at the risk of sounding all tone deaf, I think there are economic factors in this. I think there are legal and socio-political factors. I think we live in a country where people are so thoroughly disempowered that the frustrations that build up become intolerable, and then a firearm is the only way they think that they can be unequivocally heard. Because not every issue is worthy of a quarter of a million people marching down Constitution Avenue in D.C. Not every issue is something that the whole country will get worked up about. And at the risk of being taken entirely wrongly, we kill people, not we, but I mean, Americans kill people because, A, they have easy access to the instruments with which to do it. If you had to do it with a knife, that's much too personal, and most Americans wouldn't do it, but guns are impersonal and can be operated at a distance. And so you can pick out the avatar of your displeasure, and with a gun you can express it. Like it or not, a massacre like what went on in Parkland is a form of self-expression. And it's too easy for us, and it's all over the place. And it happens because we don't want to deal with the underlying issue. It's too easy to say, crazy people. Nope, it's not crazy people. Because there are as many people, and I don't even like that term, there are as many people who endure and deal with mental health issues in any other developed country and undeveloped country as there are in the United States. But in the United States, if we're going to blame mental illness on school shootings and massacres and our massive amounts of firearm deaths, then we have to explain why mentally ill people behave so differently here than they do in other countries. Because it's just not the same. And so I think we have to dig past that. That's an unacceptable hypothesis. The hypothesis fails almost instantaneously. I think there's an undercurrent in this country of deep and abiding anger, and people don't know where to direct the anger. No, I'm not saying we're shooting the wrong people. What I am saying is that the source of the source of the anxiety and the anguish is not where the shootings are taking place. A brief look at the past of this young man, Nicholas Cruz, will point out that he had any number of places where there were likely massive amounts of psychic pain, if you will. But we live in a country that doesn't give a fuck about anybody's psychic pain, and we never have. Whenever your people got to America, unless you're indigenous, welcome to America, sink or swim. Here's a rock. And we... Well, when labor began to rise in this country at the end of the 19th century, they knew who the problem was. The problem was capital. The problem was management. The problem was the bosses. And they understood. My great grandfather understood that the coal company was not his friend. It was his employer, and that they would abuse him if they got half the chance. And he acted accordingly. And eventually they got a union. And from that day forward, the coal companies worked hammer and tongs against that union. And John, you were talking about the demise of unions with the beginning of Reagan? Absolutely. And it's not just coal companies, it's not just steel mills, it's not just railroads or... what have you. I mean, Arrow was walking around New York City and, you know, the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire. People burned to death because the bosses were afraid they might take too long on their smoke break. But at least by having people organized, they understood, they had some means of expressing themselves toward the people who were abusing them. In a libertarian anarcho-capitalist wonderland, everybody is an individual. We're all lone wolves trying desperately to pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps when the boots have been fucking stolen. And so it's no wonder to me that you wind up with disaffected young people going in and shooting up their schools. Or, you know, how old is the phrase... going postal.
Since the 80s?
Yeah, bingo, Reagan. Disaffected people, workers, taking it out on other workers. And having no outlet and no means of redress of their grievances.
I guess that's why I'm so mellow, Bob. I had a union.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of going postal, that conjures up in my mind the movie Falling Down with Michael Douglas, where he plays a laid-off defense contractor employee.
Yeah.
And he has a license plate that says defense, and he basically rampages all across Los Angeles and has a shit fit when he learns that McDonald's is no longer serving breakfast. You know?
Yeah.
But it's kind of like that, you know? Like, as far as the going postal thing, I mean, that's what that harks back to me as, you know?
Yeah, and with kids in... Hey, you kids. With kids in school, they're all individuals doing almost daily battle on social media. And it's heartbreaking. And so with a whole bunch of people with no... With no means of collective action or collective counseling or you know being cared about inside a group, it's almost like this is bound to happen.
Whoa, Bob, you just made something flash for me.
Yeah?
My minion. 12 years old. He's already got a smartphone. He's starting to use it. He's got a YouTube channel.
And eventually, the cyberbullying will start, I imagine.
Well, it's already started. He's already been bullying. I picked it up from him. Because when he was in the shop, he was looking at my tool pile one day, and he saw a machete in there. So he picked it out. He wanted to look at it and play with it. So I can see where it's developing in his mind.
Yeah.
The social media stuff.
And see, with something like Facebook or the other, you know, Snapchat, all that stuff, you can feel like you're part of a group, but you're not really. You're just out there on your own. And you know, that's why like what we have going on here at the Horn has been so amazing, because it really has taken on a dynamic of a real community. People meet people. People get to know people. People talk to each other outside the program. And thus it has more than the patina of community. It has actual community. But people, you know, There are a lot of hurting people with no way to express it in this country. And again, we don't give a shit about health care. So anything that might be assuage this anguish and this anger, it ain't going to happen there. Hell, little piece of news. My little, I found out today, my little clinic here in my little town, it's over.
Closing?
Yep. Gone.
Jesus.
And
always the dollars.
So
how far are you gonna have to?
25 miles one way.
Mm. And that's mountain miles too.
This is 4-lane highway miles. But still,
oh, okay, good.
But it's still 25 miles over, 25 miles back. And you know, that's more miles on a car that doesn't need them. But this is one of those goddess of irony moments. I can't tell you how many times I've been in that clinic and had various members of staff tell me, well, it was at that clinic where the woman drawing my blood one day explained to me that that Barack Obama was a Kenyan Muslim homosexual.
Oh yeah, I remember he's talking about that.
Because, and I said, where in the world did you hear such crazy? My preacher told it to me. Well, you know, the preacher says it's got to be true. Well,
it's got to be true. It's gospel.
Yeah, and so that building has been full of people pissing and moaning about Obamacare and, you know, Kenyan Muslim socialism, when the whole time the money flowing into that clinic that was keeping it open was happening as a result of the Rural Health Care Initiative aspect of the Affordable Care Act. But now that the Affordable Care Act is being strangled, the money's not there anymore, and the clinic's going to close. And there are people who are nowhere near as well as I am, who are going to have to figure out a way to get 25 miles over and 25 miles back to go to the doctor.
It's a damn shame.
No, it's not a damn shame, Steve. It's Merca.
Merca. Well, Bob, while I have your ear, I got a question about the demise of unions that maybe you or somebody else can answer for me. Do you think it all stemmed when Reagan fired the air traffic controllers? Is that a major component, or
that
is there
was,
more?
That was that was the shot across the bow. That was telling every employer that had a union contract in this country that it was okay to go after them with their fangs bared.
That's when my dad said we're now effed, but he didn't. He used the word.
Well, you're allowed to use it too, you know.
Oh, okay, all right.
My
local union just signed a new bargaining unit.
You live in civilization, Sparky.
Couldn't believe it when I saw it in the labor paper.
I mean, there's a documentary out there about Don Blankenship's war on the UMW. And he won.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, the UMWA, through some of the most inept leadership of any modern union, kind of helped along the way. And by the way, Sparky, as regards your little minion and him noticing the machete, James says, kids are fascinated with blades. I still am, and I'm retired.
Oh, yeah, you should have seen what he wanted to do the other day.
Yeah.
He wanted to do hot knife stuff, heating them up with a torch.
Oh, man.
And my stepson was here, and he goes, why do you want to do that? You destroy the temper of the steel.
Wow. And
he goes, what's temper? So you had to explain it to him.
Picked it up from that TV show.
I don't know. There's a TV show where they heat up knives?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sure he saw it.
Yep. Forged in Steel is what it's called, and I think it's on the History Channel.
Oh, okay.
And just got a note in from Scott and Punky. Here's modern America's diagnosis. We're all connected in our disconnectedness. The question becomes, what then? This basic mantra and set of marching orders came to mind in the wee hours. Dear bought and paid for by the NRA politician, we will not be shutting up about this. We will post about every blood-soaked dollar you've received from the NRA. We will describe these weapons of war you say are fine in the hands of the mentally disturbed or the underaged. We will point out every past instance of your insincere lies and hypocrisies. We will stand up. We will speak out. We're taking it to the streets. And we will not stop until you behave responsibly, step down, or get your ass handed to you on election day. You have been warned. That's about a current situation. Out of our reconnecting and having some measure of success with that, we can find one another, get regrouped, and begin to discuss or explore other what-thens and go from there. And, you know, there's truth in that because these young Americans... These young Americans are full of piss and vinegar, and I couldn't be prouder than when some of them have looked in the camera and said, go ahead, ignore us. You won't do it for very much longer because we're coming for you, and you're going to lose your jobs. And, of course,
Young woman with the big glasses, the blonde gal.
Yeah.
Is that the one that got? That's the one that got to me. We're coming for you, she says.
But the others are saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the young men bailed out of Facebook the other day. He said there's no character limit on Facebook, and he said the threats I'm getting from NRA people. Are just too much, so I'm taking a Facebook break.
Unbelievable.
Well, no, I mean no offense, Steve, it's absolutely believable.
To go after kids, though, Bob. I mean, these people have no fucking shame.
Who of the NRA ever had any shame about going after?
Jesus.
I mean, I remember when they're in your home state. I remember when on behalf of a Republican running against him, I remember when Max Cleland was morphed into Osama bin Laden.
Right, and he didn't have any arms or any legs. He left him in Vietnam.
Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile, a note coming in from Lee in New York City. I wish you would have come to the Hornin, Lee. Lee says, my father worked for the post office after World War II. He started as a security guard. Every shift, he would get his gun and return it at the end of his shift. One day, they stopped handing out guns to the security guards. That was because of one guard who, I guess, fired improperly. This is probably in the 1950s or 60s. The NRA will probably say the post office is a soft target, the same way that schools are soft targets. So apparently the liberal media just does not want to report on the weekly massacres at the post office. What drugs are these assault weapon collectors using that only militarized places are safe? You know, like Afghanistan. Exactly. And how many times have I said that the goal of the Republican Party is to turn the United States into Haiti with cable? Somalia with cable, Afghanistan with cable, where warlords rule by dint of being able to survive. It's where we're headed, isn't it?
Yeah, we definitely are.
If we don't put on the brakes or do a U-turn, something's got to change.
Meanwhile, James points out one other thing, the air traffic controllers. Back in 1980, they endorsed Reagan and thought he would have their backs.
When you lose collective bargaining power, when you can't strike, that collective bargaining goes out the window.
And West Virginia's teachers are still on strike. All 55 counties. Schools are closed.
Good for them. Keep up.
And they're getting massive support. And the Attorney General of West Virginia, who, of course, had a hand in helping create the opioid crisis here, a Republican, has declared that it's an illegal strike. What are you going to do?
Can I set Steve straight on something?
I didn't know he wasn't, but yeah, go ahead.
When you lost your right to strike... We collectively bargained that we wouldn't strike, but we collectively bargained that we'd have binding arbitration from a neutral party. So it's always worked out for the IBEW. We have a good system. It's called the Congress of Industrial Relations.
Well, there are a lot of so-called unions that can't strike. It's right in their contract.
That, yeah, like, for example, federal employees can't strike.
Nope. Well,
post office. Even though they have their own unions.
Yeah, but they have a binding arbitration contract.
Yeah, well.
So we've gone to bargaining a couple times, and we've always beat the contractors.
But Duncan, how do you know the arbitrator isn't in the pocket of the people you're trying to arbitrate against?
Because we know what the council is made up of. It's, if you're a West Coast union, your arbitrators are made up of union representatives from the East Coast, far away as possible from your local union, so they don't know the politics of your union, they don't know what's going on, and you present your case to them, and it's made up of NECA representatives and IBEW union staff. And it's always worked for I don't forget how many years we've had it. And both sides have to live whatever they decide. And it always comes up with some good stuff for the contractor side and the good stuff for the union side, whatever they want in negotiations. They settle it.
Well, that's good to hear. Sounds like somebody thought that through.
Well, I don't know who it was, but I know it works.
But again, you're in the same state.
Yeah.
It all falls back to that. You're in the same state.
Well, no, I mean, the IBEW locals, there's IBEW locals in every state of the union. And they all have the same thing as far as inside wiremen. I don't know what the outside division does, which is the linemen and stuff, but I'm sure there's language in their contracts, too.
You're fortunate, Duncan, but I see it firsthand, and I'm sure a lot of people do, too. A lot of unions are losing their teeth. What little that remain. So consider yourself, one of the fortunate ones.
Well, I'm fortunate because I'm retired now. I got my pension and everything going in. I don't have to worry about all the union bullshit anymore. But I can read about it because I'm still on the mailing list. That's the only thing. So it's, you get a union paper, and if your name isn't in it, like my dad used to say, you know you're still alive.
And in fact, a lot of them aren't even calling themselves unions anymore. They're calling themselves associations. National Rural Letter Carriers Association. They don't want to call themselves unions because it's getting to be a dirty word.
Well, we don't call ourselves a union either. We call ourselves a brotherhood.
Even better.
I think that... you know, even today, pensions aren't safe because basically a pension is looked at as a liability from a corporate standpoint. And the only way you can make it an asset is allow the corporations to monkey around with your pension. And, you know, they don't care if they lose your pension. I mean, you know, if they make bad investments.
It's an awesome point, brother. All they got to do is go Chapter 11 and poof, there goes your pension. Is that correct?
As far as I know, I mean, I draw a pension from the company I used to work for, and, you know, there's no guarantee. I mean, as a matter of fact, there was one guy that they screwed up on what they were giving him, and they wanted all his money back. So he had started his pension about a year ago, and I think they told him that he owed them about $8,000.
Well, one difference with mine is my pension isn't from a corporation. It's from a multi-employer contract contributing group.
And the one thing that surprises me about this, I'm going to change the subject a little bit, but what you were talking about before, you know, normally... if somebody said, well, you can go ahead and beat this person up and I'm going to pay your legal expenses, you know, you would look at that person like he's a nut. But if Trump says it, you know, it's okay. And, you know, people that owned businesses, they used to, many years ago, they would say, well, you know, our employees are having a hard time making it on what I'm paying them. Maybe we ought to pay them a little bit more. It's not like that anymore. You know, people just aren't decent anymore. They don't care about each other.
Couple that with corporate greed is just taking over.
Yeah.
When you compare the CEO salary to the common worker now to what it was 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, I think it used to be, 20 to 1 or something, and now it's like up in the hundreds to 1.
Yeah, it's alarming. It's depressingly alarming.
Hey, also, if I could mention, guys, speaking of the shift of all the money to the wealthy, the Wall Street Journal did a survey, I guess, of Wall Street companies and to find out what they were doing with their tax savings. And apparently, you know, by a factor of 20, companies are buying back their shares instead of paying out dividends or paying bonuses to their employees, which is exactly what was to be expected when you have all this money in the economy that has nowhere else to go, you know, in the hands of the very wealthy. You know, they don't need it, you know. So anyway, I can't say I'm surprised, you know.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If AT&T wants to buy back my shares, they better come up with a hell of a lot more money than they're offering now, for sure.
Hey there you go. Hey, do we have time for an entertainment report?
Sure.
I think when I was last on, I was headed to a Jackson Browne concert.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, I was at a 2,000 seat theater in San Pedro. Just like he did 40 years earlier, the last time I saw him. And I mean, he sang, you know, pretty much all of the songs that you'd expect to hear him sing, except for maybe he didn't do the Hold On, Hold Out, or, you know, Lawyers in Love, or That Girl Can Sing, and stuff like that. But otherwise, I mean, he can't, you know, he did The Dreamer. He did The Pretender. He did Rosie, Lives in the Balance, Doctor My Eyes, Rock Me on the Water. Let's see here.
Somebody's Baby? No Somebody's Baby?
No, he didn't do Somebody's Baby. No, he didn't do that one. He did do Running and Empty. He did a version of Take It Easy, because he was actually a co-writer of that along with Glenn Frey. He did that as an encore. And then the final encore song was I Am a Patriot, which was really very good. So lots and lots of fun. And I missed the show last week because I happened to be in Catalina with my sweetheart. Catalina Island, first time I'd ever been there. Lots of fun. And unfortunately, you know, the fun was tempered on Wednesday by the Valentine's Day massacre down in Florida. We listened to the news reports, and after a while you have to like turn the damn thing off, you know. It's like, okay, what can we do about it? It's like, okay, you know, it's just, again, it's the NRA death lottery, you know, round and round it goes. Where it stops, nobody knows, but you know, it will stop, and wherever it stops, it's going to cause death, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, we were there like a few days. Wednesday, went there Wednesday morning, Thursday, came back Friday night, and rented bikes one day, rode for like 6 hours, got to see the Wrigley Mansion up on the top of the hill there.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we got somebody to let us in, even though we weren't. It's supposed to be like a, no trespassing. We took somebody's picture in front of the entrance, and they let us in, and you know, we got in there, got a look around, but didn't take any shots inside, but took shots of the grounds. And the proprietor there was a little bit pissed off that we were there, and so we sort of like, okay, we'll see you.
Skedaddled, yeah.
Yeah,
how'd you get there?
By bike. Yeah, we pretty much walked our bike up. It sits on a hill that's probably about.
Well, how did you get to Catalina Island?
Oh, a boat. Yeah,
he swam.
Yeah, from Long Beach.
Not everybody can fold space, Sparky.
Yeah, it only takes an hour to get there, and you know, I think the highlight.
Did you leave out of San Pedro or Long Beach?
Out of Long Beach, Tracy. Have you been there before?
I haven't been in years.
Oh, you need to go. It was a lot of fun. We met the most interesting guy in line when we were getting ready to board the boat. And he ended up sitting like one seat in front of us. And he's like a violinist. And he was telling us all the stories about how he was going to Catalina to sell some tiles he'd made like 40 years ago because he needed to raise money because his wife... I guess had frozen all his bank accounts and terminated his credit cards and had tried to poison him with oleander in his what? Margarita. Yeah. And the first song he played on the boat was, and the band played on the song that they played on the Titanic.
Titanic. What? You don't
want yeah. To yeah. Yeah. He said, well, I hope we don't have to, I hope we don't have a reprise of the Titanic, but I'll play this song. And, you know, we played another song, and he played another song, and then he just sort of, you know, sat quiet the rest of the time, but he didn't play anymore. And I ended up buying a CD from the guy. I figured, okay, the guy's like, you know, he claimed he was a baron and all of this stuff. He's got a name like Reutinger, like Christopher Reutinger. So I bought a CD. Apparently he put out an album with a couple of his buddies. They had a band. But I guess the highlight is all the interesting people that you meet on islands. I met another guy who, you know, most of these people are expatriates from the mainland, you know, let's say, if you want to call them expats. you know, it's about 17 miles off the coast of Long Beach. For those who aren't familiar with where Catalina Island is, it's one of the Channel Islands. It's the largest and most populated. About 4,000 people live there year round. Not including all the tourists. They don't allow any vehicles on the island. People ride around in golf carts or bicycles or just walk, you know?
Yeah, it's like pretty island.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. Met a guy at you know, shooting pool at the the Marlin Inn is the best dive bar around there. And saw some great live music the last night, and saw my friend from the Marlin bar at the other bar where the live music was on Friday night. And he was like dancing with this, like, he's 57, I think. He looks like 65, probably. He looked like Ernest Hemingway, you know, he had that look. And so he was like dancing with this lady who was like 83. And I thought they were like friends and they knew each other. And then she like left the bar for a little while and came back inside with a walker and started like dancing to the tunes, you know, with the walker. And he tried to grab the walker and she like started to slam it down and said, get away from me, you know. So she was either drunk and or a bit senile, you know. But I think the guy knew how to push her buttons and he kept trying to do it, you know, like a little kid trying to annoy his parents. But yeah, Islanders have definitely a different perspective on things. Met another musician, had him over. We barbecued a couple of nights, my friend Star and I. And she ran into
you
a,
barbecued a couple of nights. Did you take the armor off or did you barbecue him in the armor?
There you go. That's a good one.
Up a cowbell for that one.
Bob
we
cowbell.
Just, you know, it, there you go. That's it's cowbell for yourself. Well, you know, it's sort of like beer can chicken. You do have to barbecue the knights in the armor, you know? Right? I mean, but
well, that way they steam too. So
yeah,
it enhances the tenderness.
Yeah. So we stayed at this just delightful like 1920s hotel on the waterfront. Doesn't have an elevator. Has like two flights of stairs to walk up, which was kind of tough because we had like a cooler and we had like, you know, three suitcases. I mean, this is only for two nights, but you know, the cooler was because we had prime rib one night. We had steak another night, and the last night, Thursday night, or actually it was Friday night, we invited, we went out for Valentine's Day. I was
steak and prime rib in your cooler?
God. Yeah, yeah, we kept filling it with ice and stuff, you know, and she ended up meeting I actually had a filing deadline on Friday. And I had to work from the public library, and I basically remoted into my office and finished a filing pretty much in the nick of time, you know, more or less, let's just say. And she ended up meeting a guy who was in her brother-in-law's, who played in a band with her brother-in-law, and he happened to be there setting up for that live band that played later that night, or the live, it was like a guitarist, electric guitarist, and the guy could do anything, you know. And so we invited him over, and he had some prime rib and some steak, and you know, it was a very, you know, very charming place, very, very low key, very, very slow paced. You know, we rode bicycles for like one day for probably 5-6 hours. And, you know, we didn't go up the major hills. We just walked up the, you know, 1,000-foot high hills or whatever, you know, that they have. I don't know how long, how high they are. And, you know, we went on like three different rides that same day. And, apparently the Channel Islands are mountain peaks of, you know, of like a, you know, a sea, a range of mountains under the ocean, essentially. So I found that kind of interesting, you know. So there's the entertainer report for tonight.
Well, Rick, I have a legal question for you. And if time escapes us, I'll text it to you. Is that okay?
Sure.
Or I could throw it at you now.
Fire away. We have a few minutes, I think, don't we, Bob?
Okay, well, Tracy's trying to jump in, so I'll let her go first. Ladies first.
I just wanted to ask Rick if he's going to see Elton John when he comes next year.
You know, Tracy,
in August.
I have a hard time buying tickets like a year in advance to a concert. I probably will regret it if I don't buy them now, because I'll probably pay a hell of a lot more later on, you know? I haven't seen him since I saw him at Carver Hawkeye Arena in Iowa City in like 1984, when I got into the show free because I was working the concert like as a helping people find their seats. I don't know what you call that.
Crowd control.
Host.
Usher.
Host.
Yeah.
I was a host. No, it wasn't crowd control. I I definitely did not have the bulk back then to do it. Today, I probably could. I'm more of a linebacker now than I used to be. I used to be like a weak tennis. I was a good tennis player, but I had a tennis player build, let's say. I'm more of a linebacker now, so I could, you know, I could probably do security at this point, but, you know, I don't know if anybody would be afraid of me. Probably not. I just don't have that intimidating air. But I saw him in 84, and he was tremendous. I really enjoyed it.
That's about when I seen him, and he put on one heck of a show. Yeah, he just headlined, opening act.
Let him live, Rick. Don't go.
What's that?
I vote let him live. Go, Rick.
Yeah, let him live.
Well, actually, I have a news flash. Jackson Brown is still alive, and I saw him two Fridays ago.
How long?
Stay away from Tony Bennett. You'll kill him for sure.
Well, Tony's 90. I saw him. I saw him in December.
I don't want to hear a couple of songs at Steve
Wonder's benefit concert.
I don't want to hear another concert report until you've been to see Ted Nugent.
Oh. Well, somebody's gonna have to give me the information on him, and they're gonna have to pay my ticket because I don't want to waste my money on him.
well, just real quick, Rick, I have noticed a trend. A lot of people
pay the ticket if you take pictures.
A lot of people Mueller's been indicting have been pleading guilty. Do you think they're anticipating a pardon? I've heard this bandied around on the TV, but I wanted your take on it real quick, if you don't mind.
Well, I mean, who knows? It's like Donald Trump is, he only cares about one person himself, and then only tangentially does he care about his family members, you know? You know, pretty much like a turtle cares for the, you know, its offspring, you know, not very much, you know, lays the eggs and digs them under the sand and leaves and lets them hatch on the shore, you know? I don't know that the guy is, really very likely to pardon a lot of these people unless he does it as some kind of, scheme so he can escape responsibility. Okay. It would be all about that. Okay. If he's in fear of let's say facing charges or whatever. And, I still am holding out hope that that the NRA is going to be indicted for campaign finance violations and conspiracy against the U.S. with Russia. And I'm also still holding out hope that Trump is going to be indicted himself at some point in time.
The whole thing is far from over.
Oh yeah, no, it's
and it's got to be making Geezer disgust us. Beside himself, because they promised him, oh, it'll be over by Labor Day. Oh, it'll be over by Halloween. Oh, it'll be over at Thanksgiving. It'll be over by Christmas. It'll be over New Year's. It'll be over by Martin Luther King Day. It'll be over by Groundhog Day. It'll be over by Valentine's Day.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not going away.
I don't really see it going away. And I think the fact that Mueller indicted the 13 Russians from the Internet Research Agency that propaganda shop that was established in St. Petersburg to muck with the U.S. elections. The fact that he indicted that is kind of a marker, I think, to Trump to say, look, this whole Russia thing is not a hoax, and I'm going forward with it. And now that I've got that indictment against these people, not that I can ever bring them to justice, but at least, you know, I have enough evidence to charge them. So clearly, you know, if you try to fire me, then that's another overt act in your conspiracy to, obstruct justice, essentially, you know? So I think that was the message he was sending. I mean, I don't think there's much of a hope of any of those people who were indicted, any of the Russians facing justice. Well, you never know. They could be, you know, if they travel to Western Europe, they could be detained there by Interpol on Interpol warrants or what have you, you know? So, I mean, they could get extradited if they leave Mother Russia, you know?
I don't...
What you been up to, Tracy?
Oh, nothing, just work. Nothing.
Yeah?
In a couple of weeks, I'm going to New Orleans. I'm meeting my siblings. We're going to New Orleans for Siblings Weekend. and no significant others, no kids, just me and my sister and my three brothers.
Oh, that's good.
So we're going to be staying at Harris because I got rooms for free.
Is she bringing, wait, is sister bringing her gun?
Oh, God. Oh, well, I don't think she can't bring it on the plane, so I guess, well, no, she could check it. Oh, you could check it and check luggage, can't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Janie got your gun. Janie's got her gun.
So I need you to do some recon work for us while you're in, because, you know, the plan, Tracy, is if we can pull it together, is for the horn to have a little horn in New Orleans in August. Early August for during Netroots Nation.
So what do you need me to find out for you, honey?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe just look around and see if you can find a good park where we could set up an acorn cooker and barbecue and have a feed and see if that looks possible.
I will do that. I will ask at the hotel because they love me there because I gamble.
Ooh. Wait,
Kimba Sit. Kimba Sit.
Oh, had to say it twice. Still learning.
She's going to be two in May. She's a sweet, loving dog, but she's just useless. Like you were talking about Labrador Retrievers barks. She does not like it when people ring the doorbell. She doesn't like that, or she does not like the mailman. And her bark is frightening.
Yes, I can well imagine.
The other day she was barking, my brother called and we were on the phone and she's like, who is that? Cujo in the background. No, she has a bark on her. She's a lovey dog because she just doesn't know her own strength. She gets so excited when she sees people. She just charges. And she's 90 pounds of muscle. And she will knock you on your ass. But she just doesn't get it. But she's a sweetheart. I've given up trying to train her. I'm just like, whatever. It is what it is on her. It's just like, whatever. I got a dog. And now Jan is talking about getting another dog. I'm like, oh, God, no.
No, no, no. Are you kidding? You're still raising baby one.
See? Exactly.
Okay, so you've done New Orleans before. Have you been to Mother's?
Yes.
Okay, so you've been to Central Grocery?
No.
Okay, Muffaletta at Central Grocery.
Oh yes, you know what? No, I have gone to. I take that back. That's a lie. I went the first time I went to New Orleans. I went to Central Grocery and got a Muffaletta.
Okay. You've hit the stations. You pretty much hit a couple of the stations of the cross. You should be good. The oldest bar on Bourbon Street is the Old Absinthe House. That's worth it, Bourbon Street is tourist street, but you know. And if you're lucky, you might get the tour like Agnes and I did. If you walk by in the late morning, early afternoon, if you walk by Antoine's, you might get the tour. Let me check with the Viking warrior Pharaoh princess and see if
the Viking warrior Pharaoh. Yeah, I heard about the tracing of the toes and you see what your lineage is or whatever.
Yes.
I'm actually thinking about doing ancestry.com.
Don't.
Speaking of.
Find somebody else. Do not do ancestry.com.
Why not?
Because you give up all rights to your DNA forever.
Oh, geez.
What?
How about 23andMe, Bob?
The article I read was about Ancestry. 23andMe, I don't know about, but... really creepy. I mean, your genetic information can even be used against you. According to the terms of service at Ancestry. They've modified some of it, but it's creepy as shit. And I'm going to say this, and if I get some hell for it, that's okay. I'll have to learn to live with it. Ancestry is not officially associated with the Mormon Church. But the Mormons are fascinated with genealogy.
Yes, they are.
They're obsessed with it. You know, they dead baptize and all that stuff. It's creepy as fuck. But Ancestry is owned by a Mormon, and they have done work for the Mormon Church.
Mm.
So I'm sorry, I've got this creepy feeling that if I do anything with Ancestry, they're going to start dead baptizing my family. Not that I think it matters or anything, but it's offensive. It's kind of like when the Mormons were running around dead baptizing Holocaust victims. Oh well, yeah. I'm sorry. They're not murdered Jews anymore. They're murdered Mormons.
Plus, Bob, you might be susceptible to having some of your organs like involuntarily taken from you. You know.
Well, I don't think so. This is
you never know.
This ain't Falun Gong, and it ain't the Chinese government. But
okay,
find one of the others. But the point is, read the term. You know how you never read the terms and conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Where it has to do with your DNA, Tracy, read the terms and conditions.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Bob, because I got two of them spit tests sitting back there on the mantel right now that I've not opened yet.
Well, if they go back to Ancestry,
they might just stay sealed. I mean, good heavens.
Yeah. Just burn them, Steve.
Yeah, burn them.
Hey, how's the 666 challenge coming, Bob?
Oh, I was going to report on that, but let me finish up real quick. If you walk by Antoine's, and this lovely man comes out and invites you to take the tour, his name will be Amor.
Mm.
Amor, Tracy. And they got Groucho Marx's beanie in there. They got Groucho Marx's beret.
Mm.
All kinds of, and they'll show you all the rooms and stuff. And then if you want, you can sit down, have a drink, have a little lunch, whatever, at, you know, Antoine's. I don't mean Antoine's a Flatbush either. The 6-6 challenge has had real legs this evening, Rick.
Oh, good.
Let's see. Charlene jumped in on it. Henry jumped in on it. Brother Deacon Asa jumped in on it. And this was not an official fundraising thing. This was just a send off for Billy Graham. But that was very clever. Let me show
awesome.
A couple of emails before we go out the door. Okay. Albert in Rhode Island says, tell Tracy to go to Willie Mae's Scotch House. Yes, in New Orleans. It serves the best fried chicken in the city. And it does. It is yummy. Did you write that down, Tracy?
Yes, I did.
Willie Mae's. And that's M-A-E apostrophe S, Scotch House.
Willie Mae's Scotch House. Okay.
I just wanted to, before we go.
Yeah, hi, Larry.
I just wanted to say hello to everybody. I hope everybody's doing fine. I've been sitting here listening. I'm glad to be back with Dunk. I'm glad to be back in the chat room. I'm really missing Lottie and Timmy and all those people. I haven't talked with them in a long time. I don't know, Bob, if you've... or Dunk, or any of you, if you had a chance to talk with any of them. But, you know, I kind of feel a little rejected by them. But I've been getting some solicitation on an account from Lottie, not from him, but from someone else, asking me to give some information to get some money. I think it's a fraud.
Do not respond.
Okay, great. And as far as I was listening, and you know the thing that you were saying, Bob, when you did your filibuster about people who are people gunning people down as an expression of real psychic pain, and that they have no other way or don't know of any other way or don't understand how to channel their anger in a constructive way, that hit home with me today. So I just wanted to say that. I hope you're doing well, Tracy. I haven't talked with you in a long time. I hope you're doing well, Rick, and I hope Dunk and Steve and everyone else, I hope you're doing fine. I've just been sort of keeping a low profile here, that's all.
You too, Larry, and as it turns out, I may have a trial in L.A. or actually San Francisco Municipal or Superior Court on May 29th or May 31st. So maybe we can have a mini horning up in Northern Cal or something.
Well, I would love to meet you up there.
Yeah.
I've been doing my activism around in-home supportive services. There's some part of the 21st Century Cares Act that says that the states, in order to receive money, they have to institute electronic visit verification amongst our caregivers. So our caregivers have to clock in and out with a computer. And then the ADA Act, I don't know if you know this, Bob, but the ADA Act was amended. There's a new bill that says that the onus for pointing out access violations is now on the person with the disability. It's not on the business to make their business publicly they don't have to do public accommodations as a matter of being...
Oh, I know, it's disgusting.
Ain't that a kick in the head? Jesus.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm trying to keep my brain from being scrambled, but I can tell you that ever since, for the last couple of years, it's been really tough. But if you talk to any of those other people, Bob or Dunk or anybody, please say hello. I just don't know where they all went. You know, I just don't know where Lottie and Timmy and Jules and those people. Charles, are you still on? I don't know if Charles is on, but
I'm still here.
Yeah, I talk to Charles about twice a week, and we just hang out with each other and keep each other company, which sort of keeps me sane. And Mercedes is still here, so I've given you a report. So that's
understood. Well, Larry, you're welcome here anytime, and you are valued as a member of the community. Okay, never doubt that for an instant.
I saw economist Richard Wolff. He came to speak to us a couple days ago, and he says that. Basically, he's waiting for people to decide to get out in the streets and protest, because he says that if we don't do that, it's already dark enough in the country. It's the country's already been ravaged pretty heavily. So, okay, I can't say it any more clearly than that. That's
understood.
Larry.
Understood. Yeah.
Jules just had surgery on her hands, and they did some work on the tendons that move her fingers, and she's just about bandaged up from the tip of her fingers up almost to her elbow.
Okay, well, please let her know that these people that are trying to get a hold of me for this money sort of thing from the retirement something or EC whatever, they... Anyway, I'll talk with you a little bit later, Charles, or I'll talk with you tomorrow, and hopefully I'll see you, Rick, when you come up here to San Francisco. Hopefully we'll see.
Yeah, I'd love to finally meet you, Larry, and maybe I can take you to I can figure out a concert that's playing, in between all my trial preparation. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I hope Brian's doing okay.
He's doing very well. Thanks, man. Okay, taking calculus now, actually.
Oh, great. That's wonderful. Bob, thank you for allowing me to have some time after hours.
You're more than welcome.
After hours. I appreciate it. So long, everyone. Good night.
See you, Larry.
Good night. See you, Larry.
And I guess that'll bring us to the close of this Friday on the Front Porch on the 23rd of February, 2018. I want to thank everybody for participating. We had a rousing good conversation. Thanks for popping in, Charlie. Thank you for John. Thank you to John in PA. Thanks, Tracy. It's always good to hear from you. Thank you very kindly, Steve from Georgia Stan, all around great guy. Billable Rick. Hope you have a wonderful weekend. Ted Nugent. Those are the tickets that you want. Lee Greenwood, or perhaps as well. Kid Rock. If you can catch a Kid Rock, Ted Nugent, Lee Greenwood trifecta, you are free to use your powers for evil, or actually good, as the case may be. And of course, thanks always go out to Sparky for moderating the group. And Sparky, by the way, I was looking
found the very thing for you. I was looking over at Patagonia at their sale site, and their ultralight down vest is on sale for like $124, and you can't get cold in it. And they got their snap tee pullover down down pullover for like $99. Can't get cold in that either in the kind of weather you're talking about. So it's good stuff. And you know, I hate being cold, so that's the bottom line for me. Anyway, we'll get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for keeping the program on the air. Thanks for helping us end end fundraising for February, so we got some fundraising free February. Thanks to Ralph's for the Trash Fitz Walker Stand Challenge. Much obliged. And thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little ongoing conversation. It is a joy to have you a part of my life and a part of the community. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Back Monday. Bye now.